This is commercial towing vehicle Nostromo. Calling Antarctica Traffic Control. Do you read me, Antarctica?
Some of you may have figured out we're not home yet. We're only halfway there. Mother's interrupted the course of our journey.
Seems she has intercepted a transmission of unknown origin. She got us up to check it out.
Let's get out of here.
We've got this far. We must go on. We have to go on.
That transmission. Mother's deciphered part of it. It doesn't look like an SOS.
It looks like a warning.
And it's full of leathery objects, like eggs or something.
Whatever it wanted, it was... It wanted being it.
Move! Get out of there! Dallas?
It's a robot! She's a goddamn robot!
What was your special order?
Bring back life form. All other priorities rescinded.
There's gotta be a way of killing it. How? How do we do it?
You can't. Perfect organism. I can't lie to you about your chances. But you have my sympathies.
We're gonna blow up the ship. We'll take our chances in the shuttle. Blow up the ship.
This is Jared McVeigh from Island of Blood, a.k.a. Whodunit, and you're listening to The Hysteria Continues.
And indeed you are. Welcome back. Finally, we are back on air, as it were, after an extended break. So thank you for rejoining us, if you remember who we are. This is episode 101, and this time Eric will be taking you to Uranus. Won't you, Eric?
Yes, and just in a sheer coincidence, my underpants appear to be filled with leathery-type objects as well.
Well, Eric, you would have to understand that it took every inch of human perseverance or whatever to not shout out Toya when it was talking about leathery old things on the intro. But you'll be glad to know that I didn't. So I think that's started a new season.
This isn't the last we've heard of Toya in this episode, is it, Justin?
Unfortunately, no. No, we've got some random white noise, a kind of foghorn in space coming up later, I think, to play us out. Is that right, Eric?
So you're so evil. No, we've got a wonderful Toya song called Alien to play us out. Later. Okay. That's something to look forward to, everyone.
Yes, yes. Well, I'm sure I can probably slip in a little Susie bit there as well.
She has no songs about aliens.
She does.
What?
Pluto Drive, the creatures from the Boomerang B-side, I think it was. So, anyway, that's all to look forward to.
I'm sure it's absolutely brilliant, Justin.
It is, Eric, and we will be looking forward to your little joke. We've also got a Duck Sauce Inga remix to come up, maybe.
Maybe as a special treat.
Yes. Eric sent me a little thing, just so if you've forgotten who we are, then we might have that little bit for you later. But also, we are joined very, very early in the morning by Joseph and Nathan. So, Joseph, how are you doing?
I'm quite well. How are you?
I'm not too bad, thank you. So, a man, a few words, but I know you have many more for us a little bit later. But Nathan, how about you? You've got a new arrival in the family, haven't you?
Oh, yes, congratulations!
Oh, thank you. It's our new child. No, it's a new puppy, and he is a handful.
What's his name?
Boomer.
Boomer. Okay.
Because there's a show that Wes and I really like. It's a women in prison show called Wentworth. And one of the women who basically is the muscle, her name is Boomer, and she's like the comic relief as well. So we call him Boomer because he's really funny.
So that's kind of asking for trouble, basically, isn't it? So can we look forward to sudden scrambles and things being knocked over, like Axel, but tenfold coming up?
Or like Drunken Justin.
Oh, Eric. You've not seen, well, you have seen me in action, haven't you? But I wasn't that drunk that
yes.
night. Anyway, is Wentworth, is that the kind of the modern version of Prisoner Cell Block H?
Yes, it is.
Australian.
Mm-hmm. It's really, really good.
Is it? Okay. Well, I'll take your word for it.
It's much better than Orange is the New Black, which I still like Orange is the New Black, the Netflix show, but this third season is pretty bad. It's so boring.
Okay. All right. Well, controversial as ever on the Hysteria Continues, and will we be controversial when we come up to our main pick and say we are off into space where no one can hear you scream. It's where they should obviously send Toya's back catalogue, but maybe they will one day.
Hate you.
Thank you. So, yes, with Alien, Ridley Scott's Alien from 1979, and this is the first of our listener picks, isn't it? And Eric, you're doing your duties with this. Who picked this one?
It's Michael Alishan.
Okay, and I'm sure that's not going to be the last of Michael's choices, is it? I don't think. But we've got lots of interesting choices from listeners. Some of the ones we, let's put it this way, we may not have picked ourselves, but they may make for an interesting show. And obviously Alien is going to be a controversial pick for a slasher movie podcast. So we'll kind of come on to that a little bit later. But before we do, shall we, in time on a tradition, talk about what we've been seeing recently? And obviously it's been quite a big gap, like between Eric's legs. So Eric, would you like to go first? What have you been watching recently apart from naked hairy men on beaches in Crete?
Yeah, under the clouds. I saw the Poltergeist remake, which came out last month at some stage. This is the Gil Keenan directed Sam Rockwell starring remake of Tobe Hooper's 1982 film. Now the original is a film that I kind of like, but I've never really loved, so, you know, I'm not that precious about it. I'm in that stubborn minority who actually prefers the trashy sequels. But this remake is, it's quite close plot-wise to the original. A young girl's dragged into the netherworld because their cheapest chip's home has been built on a graveyard where they've moved the headstones but haven't moved the bodies, blah, 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 blah. And once again, the sort of crack team of parapsychology experts is drafted in to help out. And, you know, once again, the portal to the parallel dimension is through the girl's wardrobe in her bedroom, and, you know, the exit is through the ceiling of the living room. You know, it's all the same sort of major plot points as the original. The update features a much more proactive role for the middle child, who was played by Oliver Robbins in the first two Poltergeist movies. Here it's played by a kid called Kyle Catlett. And he owns the must-have toy of the moment, which is a drone, which he attaches a camera to and sends into the ether to sort of search for. She's not called Carol Ann. I can't think of what the character's name is, but you know, using this kind of cheap gimmickry is going to date this movie quite quickly, I think. It's mildly diverting. It's a bit ho-hum. It's certainly not one I'll be revisiting. And if I'm going to watch a Poltergeist movie in future, it'll be either part two or part three from the 80s. I would have no desire to see this ever again, but it wasn't awful, I have to say.
Okay, I couldn't bring up the enthusiasm to go and watch it at the cinema. I'm sure I'll catch it on Blu-ray. Joseph, Nathan, have you seen it?
No,
but Wes agreed to watch it with me if I wanted to watch it, so I'm going to, just for that reason.
Okay. It's kind of surprised me that Sam Rockwell would have been in such a ho-hum movie, because he's usually in quite good films, isn't he? Or he appears to be, anyway.
Must have been a big paycheck.
I'm sure it was. So,
okay. Another one I watched, this one's a blast from the past, from the late 80s, is Brian Yuzna's directorial debut, Society, which has just come out on Blu-ray, I think, on both sides of the Atlantic, on Arrow. What was the ah for?
Oh, because I love that movie.
All right. I remember it caused quite a stir over here, because it's sort of surreal special effects were in all the UK magazines anyway, thinking this is, you know, the best thing ever. And I certainly did enjoy it when I saw it first, but it's been, you know, not very well represented on DVD and Blu-ray since, but this was my first time watching it in about, I suppose, well over a decade. And I still find it really entertaining. It's like a very weird and kinky version of Beverly Hills 90210, and it stars Billy Warlock, who is Dick Warlock's son, and Billy himself has a tiny little cameo in Halloween 2. And he first appears to us in a psychiatrist's office talking about how he feels ostracized from his family, and with good reason, because we discover throughout the course of the movie that they can do weird things with their bodies. He spies his sister in the shower, and her boobies are on the same side as her bum, which isn't the way that a woman is built normally, Justin. You'll be surprised to hear.
How would you know about this, Eric?
I read it on the internet.
Okay, fair enough.
Okay. Anyway, the whole thing climaxes, pun intended, in an orgy of surrealism and goo, courtesy of Screaming Mad George. Now, the effects look really, really rubbery and not terribly convincing, you know, with 25 years of hindsight. But it didn't stop me enjoying the film in any way, and it's packed full of, you know, great extras. Yeah, so Society, thumbs up for me. I think it's certainly better than Yuzna's other film, Raid, around the same time, Bride of Reanimator.
Hmm. What about you, Joseph? Is it one or Nathan? Did I hear a gasp of enthusiasm from one of you?
Oh, yes. I mean, I think it's a great film. I love the whole, you know, the whole metaphor between the classes, the upper class and the lower class. And, you know, the upper class are like sucking the lower class dry, basically. It's kind of the point, because they kind of absorb these people they think are beneath them.
Hmm. Excellent. What about you, Joseph? I take it you've seen Society.
Yes, I actually really love Society. I think it's one of Yuzna's better or best films, actually. I was never, you know, a huge fan of the Reanimator films. I think they're a little, I guess you'd call them overrated. I think, you know, Society, I think that one's, you know, a lot more interesting with all the metaphors, and especially some of the you know, the great special effects.
Cool. I mentioned to Eric that when I started university way, way back in the mist of time, one of the first things we did, I took a group of people to go and see Society at the cinema, and at the end of it, they all kind of turned and looked at me. So that was a good way of making friends and influencing people. So, yes, starting as I meant to go on. But, well, Society, thumbs up, I think, shunting all around. So,
yes, a good shunt.
Yes. Anything else?
Yes, the one last thing. Well, I've watched loads of things, but I'll just mention one more. And that's I watched Electric Boogaloo, The Wild Untold Story of Canon Films, which is this new documentary from Mark Hartley, who made Not Quite Hollywood, which was the documentary about Ozploitation. This one is obviously, as the title says, a documentary about Canon Films, who run by Menachem Golan and Yoram Globus. And they were so prolific in the 80s and delivered some of the most wonderful and silly, sort of trashy movies from that decade. Things that I love, like the break-in movies, which were released over here as break dance movies, tons of stuff with ninjas in them, including one of our favorites, Ninja 3, The Domination. You get stuff on Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, Life Force, which I think we mentioned in the last podcast, tons of Chuck Norris movies. And it's very entertaining and features loads of participants. And that's probably its downfall, if it has one, is that it tries to cover so much ground in its 106-minute running time that everything is skimmed over very briefly. So when it gets onto a subject like Ninja 3 or Breakin', which I would love to know more about, because I'm a huge fan of both, it just skims over them. You get like 30 seconds on each film. So it feels, it's not as satisfying as Not Quite Hollywood, which felt, you know, much more comprehensive, I suppose is the word I'm looking for. But it's still lots of fun to be had, and there's tons of clips of movies that are just, you know, outrageous, including, you know, some from Ninja 3, The Domination, which I'm sure people going in blind to this thing will be gobsmacked to see some of the films that came out in the 80s from Canon. But one of the things I liked about it was it's revealed that in 1984, when the breakdance craze was going on, Canon Films were very much like Asylum are at the moment. They heard that a rival company were producing a film called Beat Street, so they rushed Breakin' into production to release it, you know, ahead of the rivals. But then in an ironic twist, there's a title card at the end of Electric Boogaloo that says Golem Globus refused to take part in their documentary because they were producing their own documentary on Canon called The Go-Go Boys, which they beat Electric Boogaloo to release by 3 months. Nice. So, you know, they beat them at their own game.
Excellent. Okay,
but it's really a very entertaining documentary, if only for watching tons and tons of clips of wonderfully silly 80s movies.
Cool. Okay. Well, that's something she'll look out for. Is that that's not on Netflix yet? Is it?
I don't think so. No. It's getting limited release theatrically at the moment over here. So I don't even know if it's on Blu-ray yet or anything.
Right. Okay. Okay. Right. Well, I won't ask how you saw it then, Eric. But
saw it in the cinema.
Okay, fair enough. Okay,
well, Artes.
Joseph, how about you?
Are you asking me if I've seen it?
Or, well, if you've seen it, or you probably haven't. Well, I take it you haven't, but just...
No, I do want to see that. Eric, do they cover Avenging Force?
I think it is mentioned, yeah, but again, like so many films are mentioned that they only get like 30 seconds or a minute each, but there's tons of Chuck Norris. Is that a Chuck Norris movie?
No, it's Michael Dudikoff.
Oh, yeah, well, Michael Dudikoff is in there, and they do mention all the American Ninja movies as well.
Did you say that they cover Breakin' and Breakin' 2 Electric Boogaloo?
Yep.
Okay, because I love the sequel. I love the sequel more than the first one.
Yeah, well, the people behind the sequel say they don't like the sequel. In typical fashion. In typical fashion. Yeah.
What's the matter with these people?
Did you know that, and I learned this from the documentary, Missing in Action 1 and 2 were filmed quite close together, and they released the second one first because it was the better film, and they wanted to launch the franchise with a better film. So the sequel to Missing in Action was actually filmed first, which is weird.
That is weird.
That's a little strange.
That's canon for you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Excellent. Right. Well, thank you, Eric. Joseph, what have you been watching over the last couple of months?
I've watched quite a bit, but just only a couple I'll mention here. I watched We Are Still Here. It was directed by Ted Gagan, who I used to run the Diabolical Dominion with back in the 90s. It's a pretty good little movie. I mean, it's not great. The problem is that it's just kind of been there, done that. So it doesn't really offer anything, I guess you'd say, new. But, you know, having said that, it does have a lot of great, cinematography. And the, you know, not to get into too many spoilers, but it kind of subverts the whole, spooky ghost story a little bit by just turning into an absolute bloodbath in its last, 20 minutes. So I give it, marks for that. But like I said, the story is just basically, kind of old hat, a couple moves into an old house and there's a history in the house and there's ghosts or some kind of presence in the house and it doesn't really do anything new, but look at the films we're covering, so I can't really slight it too much for that. But I don't know, it just seems like with all the ghost movies that are out like now, that's kind of the popular craze with like Poltergeist and Paranormal Activity. I guess I just kind of wanted something a little different, but I still give it a thumbs up. Entertaining enough movie. Barbara Crampton's in it. See it at least for her, or for the outstanding last 20 minutes and some good good shots of the snowy atmosphere. Marginal thumbs up.
Okay, right. Nathan, is that one you've seen? Or?
No, I haven't seen that one yet.
No, okay. I don't. Well, chime in, Eric, if you've seen any of these, but I've not.
I haven't.
No, okay. What's
I do. I'm looking at it on IMDb, and it's got a fantastic poster.
Okay.
Yeah, Mark Schoenbach designed that poster. He's kind of, kind of famous now for making all these retro posters for all these independent films. He's a really good artist.
Yeah, it reminds me of the original Fright Night poster. It's got a sort of house on the lower part of the poster and then all these demonic faces up in the sky.
Oh, I've seen that, yeah. Cool. Okay, well, thank you, Joseph. What else have you been watching?
The only other thing I'll mention is Maggie. It's the low-budget independent film starring Arnold Schwarzenegger, of all people. He did the movie for free just because he liked the story and everything. And it's just really, really good. I mean, like, fantastically, wildly different from anything he's ever done. It's not an action movie. I kind of hesitate to call it a horror film, even though its subject matter is basically about, a girl turning into a zombie. It's more of a drama, and I'd probably get lynched for saying it, but Arnold Schwarzenegger is just, he actually proves in this film that he is an actor, and he's very, very good in this, in a dramatic role. I mean, believe it or not, he's like uniformly excellent, I'd say. It's just a really, a really neat premise. It's kind of an old Yeller take on the whole zombie film. I'd say, it's in my top five of this year easily. I'd say definitely go see that. It's a definite slow burn, but it's worth sitting through just for the fantastic performances and the unique story, and actually seeing Arnold Schwarzenegger take on a dramatic role is just very interesting.
Cool. I've not seen that. I think it might be getting a theatrical release in the UK because I did see a trailer at the cinema the other week. Nathan, have you seen that yet?
No, I haven't.
No, okay. And I take it, Eric, you've not seen it by your magic channels.
Okay. Shut up, you. Trying to get me put into prison. It's that Turkish prison again. I'm not going back to that hellhole.
You had to be dragged out, Eric. Okay. So is there anything else you want to talk about, Joseph, or is it?
One more. I mean, I love this movie to death, and I watch it a lot, but since Rick Dukeman passed away, I had to watch The Burbs again for the umpteenth time. Because I love Rick Dukeman and I love The Burbs. Rest in peace to him. And I mean, a lot of people have died recently, like Christopher Lee and Betsy Palmer. Certainly, since we've been away, the bodies are just piling up and it's kind of sad.
Oh, yes. No, it is. And yes, it's always sad to lose those kind of genre legends. But, hopefully we can honor them in our special way. Actually, is that Santa? Yeah.
It sounds like Santa.
It's one of my cats. They have collars. They have bells on them, and they're in their they're in the kitchen right now eating. And I guess one of them's just scratching itself, and it's making the bell jingle.
Okay. Well, it sounded like the all through the house. The Santa slasher.
Yes, in the same. Yeah.
And that woman, what's her name? It's looking up. There's another woman died, isn't it? Who was
Mary Ellen Trainer.
That's right.
Princess Diana.
Not Princess Diana. That was a little while ago, Eric.
She did die, though.
She did, yes. But probably about 20 years ago, was it? Something like that. Anyway.
Chased into a tunnel by Eric.
Yes. Okay, well, let's gloss over that. The conspiracy theories, it'll all start again. Nathan, how about you? What have you been watching?
First off, I wanted to say that The Burbs is an excellent film.
Yes.
I had a friend of mine years ago. Three of his favorite films was The Burbs, Nothing But Trouble, the Chevy Chase movie, and Big Trouble in Little China, which the only movie out of those three I like is The Burbs. But what?
You don't like Big Trouble in Little China?
Awesome.
Yes. Oh, God, no, I can't get into that movie. But The Burbs is excellent. It is probably one of the best 80s comedies, in my opinion.
Okay, I think you know my controversial opinion, but I don't like The Burbs at all.
I remember you saying that, Eric.
Even though it has Corey Feldman in it, who is one of my favorite 80s actors, I still don't
I don't like even the Burbs. Know you anymore, Eric.
I'm not even sure.
That's a surprise for you, Eric.
Sorry, what'd you say, Justin?
I don't think I've ever seen The Burbs.
All right.
I'll try and put that right, though, and we talk about it next time. I think it's the one with Tom Hanks, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is it the one with him with the box of chocolates?
No.
That's it.
Okay. The one where he's big?
Yeah.
That's a different... Just, no, yeah. Okay. No,
I will big try and, he's I will, big in it, too.
I will try and watch it. I think I have watched it many, many years ago, but I'm sure... Maybe I'll give it another go on Blu-ray. So, Nathan, carry on.
Okay. Let's see. Well, one thing I'd like to mention before I say my recently seen is I have a quiz coming up in the next, either the next episode or the one after. And I think you guys are going to really, really enjoy it because I've put some new rules together. And just to give you a teaser in advance, in this quiz, you can either win a point or you can take away somebody else's.
Oh, I'd enjoy that.
Oh, so
I think you guys might really like this one. So, just so you know, that's coming up.
What we'll have to do is pacts, like in Game of Thrones or something. And I'll marry Eric, so we'll kind of round on Joseph or something, or vice versa.
Are you still watching Game of Thrones, Justin?
I am. Yes.
I'm all caught up on it.
I'm kind of coming up to halfway through the fifth season.
So you made it pretty far. Great show.
Yeah, it's good.
It's really good, isn't it?
It is, and very, very horrible and good in kind of good way. But as ever, people spoiled the ending for me, so I know what happens.
But, a lot of people do that.
Yeah, I know. So,
all right. So, movies I've watched. I watched Nurse 3D, but I didn't watch it in 3D. I wish I would have, but I didn't because it was on Netflix. And I really, really liked it. I thought it was really weird. And the ending is just completely slasher in a hospital It's actually it reminds me of a Crystal and Alexis catfight with slasher movie thrown in as well. Because they fight all over the hospital while she's killing people. So, I mean, it's actually a really, really fun and interesting movie. I thought the lead woman's performance really fit that role very well, I have to say. And I know you've seen it, Justin, because I remember you talking about it.
Well, yeah, people who criticized her acting in it, I don't think really understood the film. Because she's very monotone, isn't she, in it? But it kind of fits the role perfectly, and it kind of reminded me of like a cross between Sin City and Kill Bill. It's got that kind of same kind of feel to it. It's kind of like almost like comic book. You've got this kind of hospital where all the nurses are wearing bizarre clothes, aren't they? And she's walking around in these kind of Vivian Westwood kind of heels, which you would never get in a real hospital. But I saw it in 3D on a big screen, because I think I mentioned, obviously, we've got the projector. So I enjoyed it so much on Netflix when I just randomly picked it after, I think, hearing Joseph talk about it a while back. And I watched it with a vodka martini in hand, and I really enjoyed it. So I bought the Blu-ray 3D and watched it in 3D, and it is really good in 3D. It's got lots of, especially towards the end, of lots of shots of holding scalpels out towards the screen and things like that. So it's really gimmicky, but I thought it was good fun.
Definitely, and I agree with you about her performance. I mean, I thought that it really fit the role. So
there's a little bit too much vagina in there for me.
I can agree with that.
But Joseph, did you liked it, didn't you?
Oh yeah, I loved it. I wasn't, you know, really crazy about the actual ending, not the actual hospital action stuff. That stuff was great. I think the ending was a little too rushed, but I don't know. It's just gloriously trashy. It reminds me of, it actually reminds me of Sin City meets something like Serial Mom. Has that kind of almost a John Waters kind of tone to it. Mm. I think the girl playing the lead girl, the bad girl, I just think she's great. She's just that whole, just a complete, vacant sociopath. I think she does that role, very well. And it's certainly, I think she's a little misunderstood.
Well, yeah, she's got the way she looks. She's got those massive lips, doesn't she? Not Eric.
Where? Upstairs or downstairs?
On the lipstick. She paints her lips really big. And then she's got no eye makeup on at all. So she's got this kind of really weird look, isn't she? It's kind of almost a bit like Dina Martina, but a kind of a sexy version. So it's kind of, it's slightly bizarre. Eric, have you had the
pleasure? I have seen it, yeah. I did enjoy it. I can't really remember much about it, to be honest. It's about 7 or 8 months since I've seen it. But I do remember enjoying it, but not loving it.
Oh, Eric.
I would like to see it in 3D, though. Can I come to your house, Justin?
You can. You're always welcome, Eric.
Thank you. I'm jealous of your new 3D setup.
It's great. I loved it. So I've been watching lots of 3D.
Do you have a
3D
TV, Justin?
No, I use the projector onto the wall. So it's about,
that'd be awesome.
It's about kind of 6 foot long.
Is it? Ooh. Is it multi-region? Because then you could get the Amityville 3 3D.
No, right. I'm using PlayStation 3.
All right.
I do have a multi-region Blu-ray player, but it doesn't do 3D.
Yeah.
So that's a shame.
When you bought that, did Stuart ground you for 6 months?
Well, he eventually found out how much it cost. So, but he's been enjoying it as much as I have. We watched Creature from the Black Lagoon last night in 3D, and that was good fun. So, but anyway, I'm jumping ahead. Nathan, what else have you been watching?
Well, just right quick, speaking of 3D, I watched Jurassic World in 3D.
Hmm.
And when are these filmmakers going to understand that we want to see stuff coming out of the screen for 3D? I mean, I'm not wearing those glasses just because I get to see like the picture in a little better depth than I would in 2D, and I'm paying almost double the price. I'm paying double the price for the gimmick. So give me the gimmick. I've ranted about this many, many times, but apparently my words are falling on deaf ears.
Steven Spielberg's still not listening, is he?
Yeah. Well, the Poltergeist remake was in 3D as well, and it did exactly the same thing. Nothing was flying out of the screen, and I was like,
what a waste.
I know.
I mean, it's just, it's a waste of a good gimmick. It's very disappointing.
Well, the irony is with I was going to say the irony with Jurassic World is the whole point is it's a gimmick, isn't it? It's a theme park. The whole thing is a gimmick. So you would think that when you've got flying pterodactyls, you've got the perfect opportunity to have things flying out the screen, don't you?
Yeah, and you know, I was really, to be honest with you, I was disappointed in Jurassic World. I know that everybody's raving about it, and you know, people are loving it. But to me, I was expecting, when I saw the preview and it shows, you know, the dinosaurs attacking the theme park, I was thinking it'd be more of that, like people running to get away, sort of like an old Godzilla kind of movie. But most of it takes place with, you know, like random people outside of the main theme park. We only get little bits of the, you know, flying pterodactyls attacking large groups of people and stuff. It's very, very toned down. So,
well, it's PG-13. It's more of a family film, so.
Which was disappointing, because I could imagine the things they could have done if it was rated R.
See, if I'm going to watch a dinosaur film, I'll just stick with Carnosaur.
I didn't like Jurassic Park back in the day.
I wasn't a huge fan of it either.
No, I wasn't either. I think it's kind of cloying and cheap with all the, you know, the kid stuff and putting children in danger just to try to, you know, get thrills out of you. You know the kids aren't going to get hurt. And that whole T-Rex saves them, and they don't hear the T-Rex stomping through the museum. Even though earlier in the film you saw the ripples in the water and the cheap movie.
Have you seen Jurassic Park in 3D? The original converted,
yes,
because that's another one we watched, and that's done really, really well. The post 3D conversion.
Really, I wasn't really that big of a fan of it.
Really,
I don't know. It felt like nothing much was coming out of the screen on it either.
Well, I don't think anything was coming out of the screen because it wasn't. But that old thing you hate, the depth, was good.
Oh, okay.
But
I don't think we hate the depth. I think it's just the lack of things coming out of the screen.
It's like I'm fine with the depth of it. It's just every once in a while it'd be nice if they would like show something shoot out of the screen. I mean, it doesn't have to be all the time, but it's like they don't do it at all.
Mind you, isn't there that new 3D porn movie, isn't there, coming out? No, have you?
I've heard about it, but
the one that played Cannes. Is it Gaspar Noé? It's kind of
Is this?
I think, is it Gaspar Noé? He wrote, I think it's his one, where is it? Let's have a look. I might be wrong. Love, which I think is I think it's that one that's the 3D one, which has got lots of people walking out of cans and stuff, but that's supposed to have lots of 3D pop shots and stuff.
I've just seen one of the posters for it. Oh, my Lord.
what's supposed to look like?
Okay, well, this poster, like, there's a couple of different posters. This poster I'm looking at has a boob and an aroused male member covered in yogurt, by the looks of it.
Oh, blimey.
Yeah, okay. It's got to be what that is.
Anyway. I've never even heard of this. I'll have to look this up.
Well, it only played Cannes a month ago or so, it's not out yet.
What's it called?
Love.
Love.
And are you guys excited about the new porn that they're going to film in space?
It could get messy, couldn't it?
Yeah.
You can imagine
in space,
walking into all sorts of things.
No one can hear you orgasm.
Yeah. I saw the new Jurassic World, and I just thought I enjoyed it for what it was, but it is incredibly formulaic, wasn't it? And again, it's when people lose their shit over films like that, but then criticise a Friday the 13th movie for being too formulaic, and it couldn't have been any more formulaic, could it?
No, I mean, everything, it was like connect the dots. I mean, you could tell where it was going constantly. I mean, you knew right from the beginning what was going to end up happening, really. Mm. And I don't want to say, I didn't dislike it. It's just, to me, it was just okay. You know, I mean, I don't regret spending the money to go see it at the theater, but I'll never watch it again.
That's a problem with a lot of these movies that are out now, is there's no real sense of danger to anything, because you know all the quote unquote important characters aren't going to get hurt or killed. I miss movies that, you know, take risks and just kill off anyone they want to.
I'll tell you what, that's one reason I like that show Game of Thrones, because it's one of those shows where nobody's safe. I mean, Justin can say that. I mean,
yeah,
there's characters you'll love and they'll die brutally
and often.
Oh. Yeah, and often.
I'm having a hard time mustering up the enthusiasm to watch it because I just don't like the whole fantasy and the old time thing, I guess.
And you guys know I don't either. I'm not a fan of that kind of stuff, but for some reason I really am this show.
It's more political. It's a lot of intrigue and violence. There's an awful lot of gore. Back when I was 14 and played Dungeons and Dragons, then I used to love all that stuff. But what? Did you not, Eric?
Nothing.
Yeah. Well, like many people probably did, but I haven't been a fan of it for years, and I don't read fantasy. It's not my thing. But it's like Nathan. I think it goes beyond that. And also, apparently, I haven't seen these bits yet, but there's a whole massive zombie thing, isn't there? And people are saying this is how you do a zombie apocalypse more so than The Walking Dead, which is all very small-scale drama, isn't it? Whereas Game of Thrones is very much more big-scale drama.
Yes.
So, yes. Okay, is anything anything
yeah,
else?
Yeah, there was another one, and this one could be particularly of interest to Eric. It came out in the early 2000s, called Seance, and it stars Corey Feldman and Adam West.
Ooh.
And it's, Corey Feldman plays this guy that was, haunted as a child, and he and his friends at a party decide to have a seance, and they unleash, this evil spirit, and it is absolutely horrible. But it's hilarious. I mean, it's so bad. I mean, there's actually a scene in the movie where his girlfriend is having a huge meltdown and, she doesn't want to fight the evil spirit or, anything like that. And he's going to give her a pep talk. And he's like, "What happened to that strong, confident woman that I used to know?" And she says, "I don't know. I don't know where she is anymore." And he's like, "Well, I do." And he puts his hand on her forehead and he's like, "She's right here." And then he puts his hand over her heart, and she's right here.
Oh.
And then in the next scene, nunchucks. In the next scene, she has nunchucks to fight this spirit.
Oh, it sounds awesome.
It's hysterical.
I've
got to
see this. It sounds good.
It's ridiculous. It's on YouTube in different parts. It's like a 10-minute increments, which is kind of annoying. But, I think there might be a playlist where they'll just play one after the other. But... yeah, I mean, if you can find it, look it up. It's really out there, and I'd never heard of it before because I don't think it really got a big release or anything. But yeah, I mean, Adam West and Corey Feldman together in a movie—I didn't know that had happened.
Together at last,
right?
Excellent. Right, well, there's one to look out for. So Eric's making a little tent in his pants. So Nathan, anything else?
No, that's it.
Okay, well, thank you. I'll rattle through a few that I've seen. When I had a drunken night watching Netflix and I watched Nurse, I auto-played a film called Scorned from 2013, which I had absolutely no expectations for, and basically I was just too lazy to get up to stop it. And then I kind of really got into it, and again, it was a perfect kind of double bill, I kind of guess, for Nurse, because incredibly trashy. It stars Annalyn McCord, who's in Excision, which was is a great little kind of movie, and also as Viva Bianca and
Tweaky from Buck Rogers.
No, the one that Eric Joseph would do. Billy Zane, that's the one. But she's the Anna Lynn McCord plays a kind of girlfriend of Billy Zane, and she finds out he's cheating with her best friend, and then they go away for a weekend to this remote house, and basically she gets her revenge. She ties them up and tortures them, and it sounds like standard torture porn, but it goes off in this kind of completely insane right angles and zigzags all the way, and she's fantastic as this kind of completely deranged woman who's been done bad, and it's just incredibly over the top, incredibly trashy. It reminded me in some ways of those kind of those 90s erotic thrillers, but with like Shannon whatever, not Matthews,
Tweed.
No, it wouldn't be Shannon Matthews, would it?
She's the girl who disappeared, was it?
Yeah, no, yeah. No, Shannon. No, was it? Oh, no, it was Shannon. No, Karen Matthews, I was thinking. That's her mother. That'd be even weirder if it was a little girl. Anyway, we won't go there. But have any of you seen Scorn? Scorned?
No, but I just looked on the IMDb and it's from the same director as Leprechaun.
Okay, well, that's a selling point for you.
Yeah, I have.
Have you? And what did you think of it?
I thought it was absolutely ridiculous, but that's why I liked it.
Yeah.
She just goes through that whole family.
It's just kind of, but it's a perfect a double bill for Nurse because it's two completely deranged women in slightly different ways. But I really enjoyed that. Joseph, have you seen Scorned?
I haven't had the pleasure. I'll definitely look into that though.
Well, especially it's got your eye candy in there for you. So
So
there was that. The film I saw at the cinema, I went to see Insidious 3, obviously the second sequel to Insidious. Which I thought was very disappointing. I'd heard it was better than the second one, which I know a lot of people didn't like the second one. I know the second one was silly, but at least it had a few inventive touches, like the kind of traveling back through time and sort of all that kind of stuff, and which at least was clever. But this was incredibly by the numbers, and it was a prequel to the original film, so it had the main woman and the two ghost hunters in it, so I had that, and it showed their kind of origins basically. But it was just another family haunted by a spirit that it was just really, really by the numbers. I mean, I would even prefer Annabelle to Insidious 3. It had a few good jump scares, but it really is a case of diminishing returns, unfortunately. Has anyone else seen it?
Oh, I was cloud bathing in Crete, so.
Right. What about you two, Joseph and Nathan? Did you bother going to see it?
I couldn't make it through Insidious 2, so I don't really have a lot of interest to see Insidious 3.
I want to. Okay. I want to see it, but I haven't yet.
No, fair enough. It's not as silly as the second one, but it just kind of borrows lots of tropes from the others and just does it to slightly less effect. So it's not, because it's not James Wan doing it. It's the other guy whose name escapes me.
Lee Whannell.
That's what, right. From The Saw, who was in. And it's not bad. It's just kind of a bit insipid, really. So
Insipidus. Chapter
Insipidus,
three.
Exactly. So another film, just too quickly, I'll rattle through. One was I saw Starry Eyes on Netflix as well. Ooh. Which I enjoyed. I thought it was quite an interesting little movie. And it got a lot more violent towards the end than I was expecting it to. It's the one you recommended, wasn't it, Joseph?
Yeah, I liked it a lot, actually. The whole what would you do for stardom, and then what are the consequences of that? I just thought it was very, interesting, subtext, below all the violence and startling images. And I love the retro, synth soundtrack.
Mm. I really like the kind of juxtaposition between the woman's kind of slacker friends who are all kind of out to make movies, but just like were happy drinking beer and smoking pot and hanging around and just being sort of 20-something hipsters. And the other side, which is the side that she's going for, which is like the dark underbelly of Hollywood and what she would do or what she wouldn't do to get fame. And obviously where it goes at the end is quite shocking, and it turns into more of an art movie with a lot of blood and a lot of violence. And it kind of almost reminded me a little bit of not Under the Skin, which is the one with the alien in Scotland one.
Yeah, it's Under the Skin.
Under the Skin, okay, yeah. It reminded me a little bit of that towards the end. It kind of goes off in that kind of slightly weirdness. But I really enjoyed it. I thought it was really good. Nathan and Eric, have you seen it?
Not yet, no, but I do want to see it. It sounds really good.
Cool, okay. And the last one I just mentioned, because we've had a bit of a break, I've been I've had time to update Hysteria Lives with a few reviews. So the latest one I put up was the 1982 made-for-TV movie Fantasies, which is kind of has a premise of somebody's bumping off all of the fictional villains of a late-night soap opera. The selling point at the time when it came out was that it starred five of the most famous or recognisable faces from daytime soap operas. But the poster art, which I put, well, the TV ad shows a kind of woman lying on the floor with someone standing behind her and silhouetted with a knife. So it very, very much was obviously aping the slasher movie, and it's got some definite slasher movie tropes and, you know, classic imagery throughout, although it's a little bit long on a soap opera theatrics, which I kind of guess you might imagine given its origins. But I know Amanda by Night, Amanda Reese, was kind of is a big fan of that movie. Has any of you guys seen it?
No.
Yeah, it... I actually searched for that movie for, quite a long time. And then someone actually, sent the file to me through one of those, Rapid Gator share sites. And I ended up putting it on, Cinemageddon a while back. And I think it's still on there.
Okay. That may have been, possibly where my copy originated, I imagine.
Justin.
Well, I don't know. Somebody, I got it delivered anonymously. It said it was from Eric.
Says please.
I've never even heard of the film.
Or Cinemageddon.
I've heard of that, but I haven't heard of the film.
The site that shall not speak its name. But it's worth a watch, just to see kind of... I mean, there were quite a few sort of TV slasher movies. There was Deadly Lessons. There was this Hotline with Linda Carter. And a few other... Don't Go to Sleep had a bit of a slasher movie vibe as well. And also, yeah, there was a few others. I can't remember, but I mean, maybe you should do a special on TV slashers at some point. It'd be quite good fun. Mm. But okay, and it's a butt, and it's a big butt, Eric.
Oi.
Do you want to take us? Do you want to? What we got coming up now?
I have to say before we start, I was wrong, Justin. I've not seen the score you're talking about. I saw a different movie with the same title.
Oh,
I didn't want to be branded a liar, so I had to correct myself.
Okay, well, that's your homework for next time, Nathan, yes. To watch Scorned. I think you'll love it. We shall see. But shall we move on to our feature presentation?
Let's.
Okay, yes. Eric, you'll bring us back in after this teaser trailer for 1979's Alien.
Attention to the crew of the commercial vessel Nostromo. A word of warning. A word of warning. A word of warning. Alien. Coming this summer to a theater near you.
So there's this like big spaceship and shit, and they all like wake up and they're all like, yay, we're home. And then like Captain Dallas is like, afraid not. And they're all like, no way. And Dallas is all like, true story, we have to go investigate this like beepy thing coming from this planet. So they're all like, totally go investigate. And this like spidery thing attaches itself to Kane's face. So they have to go back on the ship. But when Ripley sees it, she's like, ew, that's so gross. I'm not letting that on board. And everyone else is like, OMG, like totally open the door. So they open the door and this willy like thing bursts out of Kane's chest and it grows up to be this lanky alien thing with a big head and lots of teeth and it totally kills everyone. And that's the official blurb from the back of the Alien Anthology box set from 20th Century Fox.
Thank you, Valley Girl, Eric.
Yes. Thank you very much. So a few years back, we did a top three favorite 1970s horror movies. And I put Alien as my number one for the simple reason that it's one of my favorite movies of all time, if not, in fact, my favorite film of all time. It's practically flawless, in my opinion. It opens with one of the best credit sequences ever as the word alien slowly materializes over this eerie view of space and a very low-key score. And it perfectly sets the tone for the movie. It's a film that's not afraid to take its time, and it's very much the opposite of current blockbusters. I'm looking at you, Michael Bay. And it has this languid pace that still manages to intrigue and never drags. It never feels slow, in my opinion. And it avoids the modern pitfall of sort of flashy, headache-inducing editing, although things do get frenetic towards the end, but it's justified at that stage of the film. The environment of the Nostromo, which is the spaceship they're on, and the inhabitants of the spaceship feel kind of real, or as real as you can get within a science fiction movie. And the dialogue often appears improvised, and to the extent that some of Sigourney Weaver's delivery early on in the film feels kind of flat or deadpan, but I don't view that as bad acting. I mean, I can understand if somebody would accuse her of that, but I don't see it that way. I see it as she's kind of doing this spot-on portrayal of a bored mining worker. And I'm really, she really gets to flex her acting muscles in the second half of the film, and I think she's superb in it. And all the cast are, to be fair. I think Veronica Cartwright is another particular standout as the whimpering Lambert, or the Justin character, as I like to call her. What evs? Was that a horse? Somebody got a horse. And imagine that 1979 audiences would have been surprised that Ripley ends up as being the heroine of the movie, because she's not really set up that way in the opening half of the film. It's very much aimed towards Dallas, and you think he's going to be the hero. He's going to defeat the alien and sail off, or drive his spaceship off into the sunset, although you don't have sunsets in space, so maybe that's not a great analogy. So, you know, it does that psycho trick of killing off, you know, it's probably its two name actors, John Hurt and Tom Skerritt, you know, are killed off first. So it has an engaging cast, it has this eerie atmosphere, and it has some of the most stunning visuals I've ever seen in the film. You know, for a film that's over 36 years old, the effects still look pretty darn good. And most people would point to the chestburster scene as being the iconic moment of the film. For me, it would be where they find the derelict spaceship. I know it comes quite early in the film, but just the visuals, the whole design of the derelict craft, the space jockey scene, which forms the basis for the Prometheus prequel, which came out a few years ago. All that stuff is astonishing to me. And H.R. Giger's work is just stunning. You know, almost every frame of the film is almost like a work of art. My least favorite scene in the movie, and this is a bit of a spoiler alert, you know, the only misstep in the movie for me is the rather silly moment where Ash, who's now revealed to be an android, tries to stick a rolled-up magazine into Ripley's mouth. I've always found that to just... I mean, it sounds ridiculous even saying it, but it looks even more ridiculous on screen. But this is quickly followed by one of my other favourite scenes in the movie, is where they revive the severed head of Ash, and he has that really sarcastic interchange with Ripley, you know, telling her that he extends her sympathy. He extends his sympathies to her because he... basically is convinced everyone's going to die. So I love sci-fi, I love horror, and this blends the two genres together better than any other movie, in my opinion. It captures that eerie loneliness of space that Kubrick achieved in 2001, and, you know, and it mixes it with sort of monster movies, and, you know, it takes the suspense of Halloween, which is probably where its sort of slight leanings towards a slasher movie come from. And contrary to what many critics say, I don't think it's a very gory film. Apart from the chestburster scene, the gore is mostly off-screen, or it's very, very rapidly edited, so you don't get to see much. And I suppose the best thing I can say about Alien is that I've seen it dozens and dozens of times, including twice in the big screen. I was fortunate enough to see it. Not back in 1979, Justin. I wasn't old enough. But it always entertains me, no matter how many times I've seen it. And I'd never tire of it. We were doing Nightmare on Elm Street last year at one stage, and I think we all agreed that it was a bit overfamiliar, and rewatching it was not as much fun as it used to be. But with Alien, for me, I can watch it just... I can continually watch it and I never tire. So it's a 10 out of 10 movie for me. Easily the best film we've covered on the podcast. Controversial, possibly. Even though, you know... I probably would not consider it a slasher movie myself, but I can see why it can be shoehorned into the genre. So, Nathan, as the one person on this podcast who I'm certain does not like sci-fi, what do you think of Alien?
Okay, well, you are right that I am probably the lone person on this podcast who does not like sci-fi at all. The actual thought of going to see the new Star Wars movie fills me with nothing but dread, but... with that being said, I absolutely love Alien. I think for me, it feels like a slasher movie just as much as I would call Rabbit Grannies, you know, similar to a slasher movie.
Let's not go there.
In that, even though it's not a human and it's not a typical location that you would expect a slasher movie to take place, it is a group of people in a secluded location and something is picking them off one at a time. And to me, that, you know, I guess that my definition's broad. So to me, like, I kind of enjoyed it for that, because the thing I love about movies like that is not knowing who's going to get killed when, you know. You don't know who's in danger, I guess, at each point in time. So I think that's kind of fun. I did like the characters. I think one thing, the chest bursting scene, obviously, that sticks out 100%. I mean,
It sticks out of John Hurt's chest.
He does. Unfortunately for him, he did hurt.
Oh, I didn't even spot that pun. Well done.
And I think, see, I didn't see Alien for a long time just because I'm not a sci-fi fan. But, you know, I kept having people tell me I should watch it, I'd like it, I should watch it. And by that time, you know, Aliens and the third Alien had come out. And I just had this image that Sigourney Weaver's character, you know, Ripley, was just this 100% badass character. So imagine my surprise when I finally watched the first Alien and she's not, I mean, she's not a weak character. I wouldn't classify her as weak, but she's not what I was expecting. You know, it wasn't like like she is in Aliens. You know, she's, I think her attitude is much different in Aliens, in my opinion, than it is in Alien. But I loved her performance in Alien. I thought that she did a great, great job as that character. And, you know, I liked the cat.
Oh, yeah. That's
I did like the cat.
It's just, I love the way that the whole climax hinges on rescuing the cat.
Yeah, and I agree with you, Eric. The, you know, the scenes that you were talking about, you know, your favorite scenes, like at the beginning when they're investigating, you know, the other ship or whatever, it gives you this sense of dread. Mm. You know, I kind of had like, okay, you know, something's going to happen, but when, you know, and that kind of had me tense. And I like when movies can pull that off. And I just thought the direction and everything in this movie was done really, really well. So making me like a sci-fi movie is a huge step. So kudos to the filmmakers.
Joseph.
Hated it.
Yeah, I'm sure you did. Liar, no, liar.
Actually, I think Alien is a terrific movie. I actually watched it right before we started recording. I think what this film does really well is, you know, basically what you both said is that it's a slow burn for the first hour. I mean, it has that kind of a, is anyone out there? Is anyone watching us? Kind of feel to it, and you know this space crew just basically, you know, they get in on this planet and they kind of investigate and then they get back on the ship and, you know, they spend quite a bit of time kind of conversing about going home and, you know, this and that, and there's this kind of, you know, like underplayed kind of moody score that's just kind of, you know, over that. So it's like just slowly building into something, but you don't know what. And then, you know, finally it gets to that just outrageous chest bursting scene that just kind of kicks off, you know, the action portion of the film. I think that's done really well. It's a movie, you know, I mean, a lot of movies, you know, take their time getting to something, but they, you know, they have no intrigue. This one's just, you know, it's all intrigue until the action, which is, you know, like I said, it doesn't work in a lot of movies, but it definitely works here. I think Sigourney Weaver as Ripley, I enjoyed her here more than, you know, and then the sequels where they turned her into kind of a badass. I like, you know, I like vulnerability. I like, you know, I identify with that more than I do, you know, people spouting one-liners and just, you know, acting all tough. I like all the other characters. You know, when I first saw Alien, the whole Ash as a android was very surprising as well. I love Yaphet Kotto. I think his name is Parker. Was it Parker?
Yeah,
yeah. I loved him. I loved Lambert. I mean, I loved everybody in this movie. You know, you don't want to see any of them die. You know, as far as this being a slasher film, I'd say yeah. I mean, it has all the tropes. You know, they're in an isolated location, getting picked off one by one. There's even a cat scare in space. You know, I like that. It's definitely, you know, it hinges on that whole you know, one by one, you know, scenario. Of all the Alien films, it's definitely my favorite, you know, far better than Aliens, which, you know, I like Aliens, but I think it's a little overrated. It's, you know, more bombastic action, where this one's more, you know, quiet dread and mood and, you know, just setting you up just to experience terror, you know, in one big, you know, fell swoop. And, you know, for that, I'd give, you know, thumbs way up. I'd say definitely a 10 out of 10 movie for me as well.
Excellent. Justin, I know you've seen this recently on the big screen. What are your thoughts?
I did, yes. I had the pleasure of seeing it at the Planetarium, which was organised by a group called Runs and Rivers, which is organising horror movie showings in Bristol and beyond, actually. And I think they've shown it in Leicester and various planetariums around the UK. Yes, it was really interesting to see it on literally a big screen and projected onto the ceiling of a planetarium. So it was kind of the perfect home for Alien. It's one of these films that I feel, if I'm honest, that I've seen so many times now that the impact is lost on me in some ways. only in the way that some of my other favourite films like Halloween and other films, sometimes it's the familiarity doesn't breed contempt, but it's a bit like when you've listened to a song over and over and over again, and it's one of your favourite albums, it almost becomes background noise because you can't, you know every skip and every beat to it, and I kind of do with this movie. But having seen it on the big screen, it was a bit of a revelation to actually see it in a way, because obviously I hadn't seen it on the big screen. Even I was too young to see it in 1979, Eric. but yeah, I really enjoyed it. I think it's a great film. I think for modern audiences, I think would struggle. People, you know, who have grown up on the fast cuts, you know, Michael Bay movies would struggle with Alien today because it is very slow. But it's never boring. I mean, it's 70s movie slow, which I think works really well to build up that feeling of dread, which, you know, we've just talked about, and the fact of isolation and then being out in space. And I think out of, you know, all horror films set in space, not that there's been a massive amount, but it's certainly Alien definitely is the best at creating that sense of isolation. You really do feel that these people are, you know, many thousands or hundreds of thousands of miles away from any other humans, and and of course it played on that with the tagline of in space no one can hear you scream. So I thought it was, you know, it's really well done. I like Sigourney Weaver as Ripley, because I think it was interesting following up from Laurie Strode in Halloween, and again I don't know what the decision was, why it was offered to her, because I did read that the character Ripley was written for a man, so it kind of which is interesting. So that's possibly why she was kind of fairly masculine or androgynous in some ways. Although I do wonder whether or not, if say if Tom Skerritt had been in that role, whether or not he would have worn very tiny skimpy panties in the end scene.
Well, women's panties.
Sorry,
women's panties.
Well, or a thong. Can you imagine if you got someone? That was what I found was kind of a thing that was weird, was that it was quite ahead of its time in the way it portrayed a woman and a hero rather than almost a heroine, in so much she was kind of like a kind of masculine role. But then they obviously got her to wear very very skimpy panties to get a little bit of sex appeal at the end of the film, which to my mind is, I mean, a lot of people like that scene. I think that's a bit of a misstep in some ways for the film, because it slightly undermines the strength of her character. But I like the fact that she was fairly, not sardonic, but she was just kind of fairly kind of ho-hum to start off with, and I didn't find the acting bad. I just thought she was kind of, you know, she's basically, they were doing what would probably be an incredibly boring job most of the time, wouldn't it? And so that's how it kind of came across. So it's almost like they've got a little bit of excitement, but it obviously turns to horror. And the iconic scene of obviously a chestburster scene is one of probably the most iconic in all horror movies. And I like the fact that it's set in space, but it's not really a sci-fi film. I mean, it is, obviously it's got all the trappings of sci-fi, but it's a horror film. Or I think as Ridley Scott described it, it's a film about terror. And I think he said he wasn't actually interested in sci-fi, but he really liked the script. So he's obviously changed his mind, because if you look at something like Prometheus now, it's all about sci-fi and not about horror at all. But yeah, at the time, he wasn't particularly interested in sci-fi, and I think his interest lay in making a scary movie. And Alien definitely succeeds in that. One of the things that I really, obviously the you know, spoken about H.R. Giger's The Alien, which is, again, incredibly iconic. But when I watched it again, it really hit me. The way that's why it's so creepy, The Alien, for lots of reasons, but it's that kind of weird staccato movement where it's kind of unnaturally, it moves kind of in a really unnatural way. It's almost like a kind of psycho mime type movement, and it's very, very effective at being literally alien to what your expectations are. And, you know, at the end of the day, just like I'd watched Creature from the Black Lagoon last night on Blu-ray 3D, and that is a man in a monster suit, and so's Alien. You know, the monster in Alien is a man in a monster suit, but it comes across in a way that makes it feel much more real, or much more unreal, perhaps. So, thumbs up. I don't think any of us are mad enough to say that we don't like Alien.
I went to see Prometheus, you know, when it came out, and I guess it was okay for what it was. But, you know, watching that, when I was watching it, I couldn't help but feel that it was just, even though it was supposedly a prequel to Alien, it aped a lot of its best moments, like the whole, he's coming up right behind you on the radar, you know, just like doing half-assed versions of stuff that we've already seen, you know, done a lot better, and, you know, kind of shoddy CGI and bad makeup. You know, you get, you know, a lot more, you know, dread and thought put into something, you know, with something back in 1979 as opposed to 2000 and what was it, 13 it came out. Just a little aside there.
No, but I was watching Prometheus recently as well, because I own it on Blu-ray, and they're trying to cram too many ideas into that film, I think, whereas there's kind of a minimalist approach in Alien that really works in its favor, whereas in Prometheus you're just being bombarded with stuff constantly. And it feels kind of rushed in places.
It's not only that, it's just like, you know, Alien just barely, I mean, it doesn't even really scratch the surface of the whole, you know, the whole engineers and all that stuff. Mm. I don't really care about that. I mean, that's pretty much what Prometheus is trying to explain, all the stuff that I didn't care about in Alien, whereas in Alien, all I cared about was, you know, the characters in this isolated, you know, place, you know, being picked off by this, you know, this creature, this one creature. You know, Prometheus just kind of, you know, bypasses all that good stuff and, you know, tries to focus on, well, what is all this stuff they found, you know, here? I didn't care about that.
I was intrigued, I have to say. And when I heard Prometheus was going to follow up what the Space Jockey was all about, I was really, really intrigued. Now, what I got in the end was possibly disappointing, because they revealed that the what looked like a skeleton in Alien was actually just their spacesuits, which I thought was a bit of a cheat. But yeah. I did enjoy Prometheus a lot more than other people did. But the more I watch it, the more problems I find with it.
And not to pick at Alien, you know, at all, because I really do love the film. You know, and you can't really pick at something that's, you know, this grounded in complete fiction. But the whole opening the space doors, and you can actually hear the explosion and wind blowing in space, I thought that was kind of humorous for, a movie that pretty much takes itself seriously with getting, you know, kind of space details right up until the ending. I kind of got a chuckle out of that.
Well, I mean, the only film I've seen that has that has done space properly, I think, is probably 2001. Although maybe Gravity did it as well. I can't remember.
I haven't seen Gravity yet.
What about Spaceballs?
Spaceballs actually does a good spoof on Alien with a chest burster with John Hurt. He's in that as well.
Yeah. Well, look, we just, whilst we're talking about Prometheus, why don't we just go through the sequels just quickly? Joseph, you were saying earlier that Aliens you think is overrated. Now, I used to love Aliens back in the 1980s, and I think I preferred it to Alien. But now I've completely changed my opinion. I do find flaws with Aliens, and, you know, not just plot-wise and that, but if you're watching it on Blu-ray, the effects have dated quite badly. Now, I remember watching this and thinking it was a $100 million movie back in the day. But now it looks like a $5 million movie when you're watching it. And it certainly looks like an inferior product to Alien. I do find it entertaining, but the action approach, I think, is far less effective than the sort of terror approach, as Justin was saying about the original.
Yeah. Yeah, don't get me wrong. I think Aliens is a fantastic movie for what it is, but I preferred the quiet dread over the whole rah-rah, let's kill the bad guy, action cliches of Aliens and the whole, game over, man, spouting one-liners here and there and turning Ripley into this unstoppable, badass. When I like the vulnerability of her, kind of her bored, just waiting to get home, kind of blasé attitude, more than I did her just going around in a big, steel machine killing aliens left and right.
Yeah, I mean, there are great moments in Aliens. Carrie Henn's performance is not one of them.
No.
One of the worst child actresses I've ever seen. Justin, what are your thoughts on Aliens?
Well, I'm going to see Aliens again on the big screen at the Planetarium in August. They've doing so. I'd be.
Do you actually do you have to lie down to watch that? Is it?
It's not one of your kind of movies. No, you're just in one of those seat that kind of leans back, so you're looking at the ceiling. But so I'm looking forward to seeing it again. I used to love Aliens, and I probably still do. But it's and I think, to be honest, I appreciate the audacity of taking it into that kind of balls out action movie, because like many sequels don't do that. It's a bit like almost like having Halloween and then having Halloween 2 as a musical or something, or having it as a kung fu movie or something. It just goes in completely different direction and inverts everything in Alien. So it could have sucked the big one, but in fact, actually, I think it works quite well under its own steam. Because to be honest, you couldn't have made Alien in 1986. You could have done, but it wouldn't have been the same. It would have been far more high octane and neon, and
I love neon.
No, I know, but you know what I mean. It wouldn't work. Yeah. So I liked Aliens, but I prefer Alien because that threat, the one single monster, and then you have a legion of monsters. It does everything like in Scream. They talk about sequels. It does everything that a sequel should do in some ways, is ramping up, turning up to 10. But I do like it, but for different reasons. But yeah, I'm prepared to be disappointed when I see it again on the big screen. But we'll see.
No, I mean, I do. I still really, really enjoy Aliens. I was just watching it on Blu-ray. I was surprised about how model-y the spaceships and the base where it all takes place looked, considering how spectacular it looked to me on VHS back in 1987. Nathan, have you seen Aliens?
Yes. I liked it. It's probably not one that I'd want to go back and rewatch, because I think it's a little less horror, a little more sci-fi. Whereas the first one I thought balanced it really well. Aliens, I was entertained, I'll say that. But ultimately, it's just not one that I'd rewatch.
Okay, we'll get on to Alien 3 then, which is one of the Marmite sequels. This is one that I didn't like when I saw it first. I think the biggest problem is that there's too many characters who all look identical. They're all wearing the same clothes, all have shaved heads, which isn't usually a problem for me, but as you know, Justin.
Yes, I was going to say, Eric.
But yeah,
it's set in a prison as well. So.
Sorry?
And it's set in a prison as well, which obviously is one of your
yeah, well, the film itself gets to a point where you just haven't a clue who's who and what's going on and who's just been killed or who's that running down the corridor. I think the director's cut it's not director's cut. Is it called the producer's cut or the extended cut that came out on DVD about 10 years ago? Really, really is a vast improvement. It goes on for about an extra 40 minutes and it fleshes out some of the other characters, introduces new subplots that were sorely missing from the theatrical version. And I think it is kind of underrated now. I can see why it was viewed as a major disappointment after Alien and Aliens. But I think, time has been quite kind to it. David Fincher has proved his doubters wrong, certainly in the subsequent years. I enjoy Alien 3. I can go back and watch it, occasionally. It's a bit depressing at times, so maybe it's not a party movie in the same way that Aliens is. But Alien 3, Justin, your thoughts?
I quite like it. I like the change of pace, and obviously the Britishness about it was quite different and unusual. I remember it being kind of slagged off a lot when it came out. The thing, when I watched it again relatively recently, which I think we might have mentioned on the podcast before, the thing that takes me out of the movie now is that because it was at the kind of the beginning of CGI as a major force, that the CGI in the movie is particularly bad. It doesn't work at all, especially in high definition. The CGI alien looks exactly as you imagine as a bad CGI, and it sticks out like a sore thumb. So, you know, if they ever went back and did what they did to Star Wars, they could probably, you know, if they did a special edition and went back and redid the alien effects, not completely, but just made them actually look like they're there rather than Manic Miner. It is a blast from the past, but that would be an improvement. But overall, I liked the film, and I remember at the cinema watching it, and this chasing down the tunnels scene, it seemed almost like 3D. It was kind of very like those kind of things you used to get in the 70s, which in theme parks where they used to have these domes where you'd project rallies in Monte Carlo from the point of view of the cars screaming down a hill, or in San Francisco, and then when it stops, everyone falls over. So it felt a bit like that. But I it's certainly probably I prefer it to Part 4, put it that way.
Well, yeah, I think I prefer a lot of things to Part 4, but we'll get on to that in a minute. Nathan, have you seen Alien 3?
No.
Okay. We'll pass this over to Joseph then. Alien 3?
Yeah, I appreciate Alien 3 a lot, actually. It tries, you know, not as successfully, obviously, but it tries to get back to the whole, you know, the isolation of the original Alien and, you know, just one alien. I like the prison setting. You know, like you, it's kind of hard to differentiate between characters because, for obvious reasons, everyone looks the same. You know, the only thing really setting them apart, you know, is skin color or, in Ripley's case, gender. But I don't know. It's kind of a back to basics type movie. Definitely not a smashing success, but I think it's a little underrated, and I think it has stood the test of time a little bit. I kind of wish that the extended cut would have been the one to, you know, get the initial release. Then I think it might have gotten more, love, you'd call it. I think people would have, you know, been more, you know, accepting of it.
I think it was released at a time where movies had to be 2 hours or under, whereas it's completely different now. All your blockbusters need to be 2.5 hours plus. So that's probably why it was cut down.
Well, normally, you know, I have a problem with, like, you know, exceptionally long movies, you know, especially in the horror genre. You know, I think a horror film should just get to the point, you know, because it's, you know, it's basically, you know, it's about, you know, I don't want to say cheap thrills, but it's about thrills. So, you know, get to the thrills. I mean, you know, so normally, you know, 2.5 to 3 hour movie kind of, you know, I'm like, all right, just get to the point. But I think it kind of in the extended cut with Alien 3, I think it actually does the film a lot of favors.
Oh, it does, definitely. But I would agree with Justin. I think a lot of the effects are dated really badly. Again, going back to my point on Alien, and whether the effects in Alien still look terrific. And Alien 3 being made 13 years later looks shoddy now at times. Which brings us nicely on to Alien Resurrection, which I'm ashamed to say I loved when I saw this in the cinema in 1997. But I absolutely cannot stand it now. I hate the quirky humor they brought to the series, which just does not fit in with the series at all. It was from the directors of Delicatessen and City of Lost Children. I can't remember their names. Justin, can you remember?
What, John? Some French dude.
Anyway, yeah,
Jean Baptiste.
And also, you know, Guggenheim. Ripley.
Sorry, no, Karen.
Okay, I was just saying that the resurrected Ripley is unrecognizable as the Ripley we know and love. I know they're trying to go somewhere different with the series, and then Winona Ryder's character turns. There's problems with that film from the very start. Probably the biggest problem for me is the introduction of quirky humor and quirky characters, you know, saying quirky things. Dan Hedaya is his name. His character gets his brains eaten out, and he pulls a funny face, basically. And it just makes me want to cringe thinking about it. I'm getting ahead of myself here, but I think Alien versus Predator is a much better film than Alien Resurrection. But Joseph, I'll start with you. Alien Resurrection, your thoughts?
I saw it when it came out the theaters. That's the last time I saw it. I thought it was terrible. Has one good line of dialogue is when Ripley says, "She'll breed, you'll die." Just the way she says it.
Yeah.
I love that. But the movie's just a complete mess. You know, terrible CGI. You know, the quirky humor doesn't work. What is Winona Ryder doing in this movie? I mean, how does she keep getting work? What is she doing in an Alien film?
I know.
She's terrible.
Talk about being out of place, yeah. And yeah. Do you remember the awful hybrid alien that appears at the end?
Yeah, it's just so cheap looking.
Yeah. Nathan, I'm assuming you probably haven't seen Alien Resurrection then.
I have not, but Winona Ryder is awesome. She might not have been in that movie, but she is in other movies.
Well, she's good in Lucas with Corey Haim.
She did really good in that movie. I want to see that again. I'm glad you brought that up, Eric.
Thank you.
I liked her in Beetlejuice, but that's about it.
She was with Bob Hoskins in Mermaids as well.
Oh, Beach. Yeah. She gets slapped by Cher.
Oh, I want to be slapped by Cher.
Right.
Justin, do you want to be slapped by Cher?
No. Okay. I'm not a big fan of Cher.
Are you a big fan of Alien Resurrection?
No, but I did like Winona Ryder in Heathers. Of course, that's the other.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one.
That's a good one.
But I'm actually looking across at the box set, the Blu-ray box set I've got of the Alien Quadrology, I think they called it. And I haven't seen, I think I did watch the fourth one again a while back, but I remember seeing it in the cinema and there were bits of it I liked. I liked the underwater section. I thought that was quite good, but I thought the whole kind of like getting the team back together type thing almost, you know, that real is almost like reminded me of a bit like Guardians of the Galaxy, where you're getting all like you've got to establish all the wacky characters all getting together and all clashing. It's really kind of rote, kind of overdone, you know, sort of cliche thing. I think it had some interesting ideas, but yes, it didn't. The humor doesn't work. Aliens franchise is not a franchise that lends itself to humor.
No, especially after Part 3, which is one of the most humorless films you'll ever see.
Exactly. So, yeah, I wasn't a big fan of it. I liked the ending where it kind of obviously hinted that it was going to be Alien on Earth, didn't it? Which is kind of the end. I think they were is it the end the spaceship is kind of hurtling towards the Earth?
Yeah, and there's an alternate ending as well where they're actually on Earth and they're overlooking a totally nuked Paris, is it?
That's right. Yes, no, I remember that, yeah. So, obviously that film pretty much killed off the franchise, didn't it? Speaking of
aliens being on Earth, the teaser for Alien 3 had the tagline, "On Earth, everyone will hear you scream," which made me think at the time that it was going to be aliens coming to Earth, and I got kind of excited thinking, ooh, this will be an interesting idea. But that didn't happen until Alien versus Predator.
I have a question for you guys, since you've seen these movies and I haven't. And this is kind of spoiler territory for, I guess, Alien 3.
Yeah.
So people like avoid this if you haven't seen Alien 3, but I've already had it ruined for me. But I read that she dies at the end of Alien 3. So how is she in Part 4?
They clone her.
They
get her DNA, and there's a scene. There's actually a really good scene in Alien Resurrection where she stumbles across this laboratory where she finds all these malfunctioning or aborted clones of herself, where they're all distorted and deformed, and she gets quite emotional. And that's actually a really good scene, but it jars because it's not in keeping with the tone of the rest of the movie.
Oh, okay.
But she's the clone of her is a mix of human and alien DNA. So she's got this kind of super strength, and her blood is kind of acidic. But she acts kind of aloof, she's emotionless, I suppose, in this film.
Oh.
Which means you can't engage with her character at all in it.
I guess, and that kind of takes away, because I did feel like you could engage with her character, in especially the first one.
Oh, definitely, yeah. I like the fact in the first one that she's really by-the-book worker at the start. Like, she won't let them on because of quarantine laws when Kane comes back with the face hugger on his face. And she's very nerdy, I suppose you'd call her. She reminds me, actually, of the guy in Don't Go in the Woods Alone who's always giving out advice about how to survive in the wilderness. What's his name? Craig?
Craig!
Yeah. So, yeah, she's the Craig of Alien. Slightly better at acting, though.
Yeah. Lambert, I'll agree. We were worried.
If you go into space alone...
Would we? Well, any of us?
Yeah.
Oh, no. I don't want to go in space. I got no interest in that.
Okay.
What happens if... Jared Padalecki, the other one that you like. What's his name?
Who, me?
From Supernatural? Who's the guy from Supernatural?
That's Jensen Ackles.
What happens if Jensen Ackles was stranded on the moon and needed somebody to help go save him?
Justin can go.
Okay.
I'd fall on that sword, as it were.
Who are misses?
But I'm right in thinking, I don't know if it's going to happen now, but wasn't there, was talk of doing a direct sequel to Aliens, wasn't there, with Neil Blomkamp, or whatever his name is, the guy who did District 8.
Yeah, I remember something about that. Yeah, that would take place between Aliens and Alien 3 or something, or would just ignore Alien 3, yeah.
Yeah, and he'd done all he basically wanted to bring back Ripley, Sigourney Weaver, and who was the other one, Michael...
Bean.
Character. And he'd done all these drawings and stuff. And then I think 20th Century Fox were interested in doing it. But then his last film, was it Chappie or something?
Yeah, it looked awful.
Yeah, that kind of bombed. So I don't know whether or not there's still that interest, because Prometheus 2 is moving apace as well, isn't it? So
yeah.
But that obviously is a completely different, going in a completely different direction. So, but the Alien versus Predator movies, which now I have absolutely no recollection of seeing any of them at all. I have seen the first one, I'm sure, but I don't remember it at all. So, Eric,
Alien versus Predator was directed by Paul W.S. Anderson, who did all the Resident Evil movies, so it feels very computer gamey. It has no depth or substance to it, but it is kind of entertaining, but feels nothing like the previous four films in the series. It's very, very disposable and has kind of cheesy action hero type humor in it. But if you go in expecting, what you would normally get from a Paul W.S. Anderson movie, it is okay. Its sequel, Alien vs. Predator Requiem, is dreadful, though, however, because it features annoying teenagers, having parties at a swimming pool. And this all sounds actually quite good.
It does.
Great.
Yeah, yeah. But it's not. It's directed by two special effects guys. And when special effects guys go to direct a movie, the outcome is usually sort of 99% of the time a bit duff. And that's the case with AVP Requiem. That's what we call
it. Who's the good guy? Like, if it's Alien versus Predator, they're both bad guys. Like, which one's
This is a spoiler alert for AVP. Okay. If you don't want to know who the good guy, the bad guy, the good guys, they're both bad guys against humans at the start, but then the Predator becomes a good guy and joins humanity towards the end of AVP, of the first AVP versus Predator.
Okay.
Well, I would say the Predator anyway, because, he's... not to get on the Predator films, but he's, he's an honorable hunter, whereas the alien is just, I will kill you.
There's a scene, there's this wonderfully cheesy scene. It actually reminds me of that scene you were saying in Seance, Nathan. There's a scene in Alien versus Predator where the final girl walks up to the Predator and says, "The enemy of my enemy is my friend." And I think she reaches out her hand to him or something like that.
I might have to watch this.
And there's a scene of them running side by side to escape an explosion as well. It's very, very, very cheesy.
So what about the Alien ripoffs that have been... There was Alien 2,
On Earth, yes. On Earth. I was watching
that's
that.
Alien Contamination, isn't it?
Yeah.
No, that's just Contamination. Alien 2 on Earth is also known as Alien Terror. It's a different film.
Mm. Yeah. I was going to mention Alien Contamination. That? I love that film.
Yeah.
That's Luigi Cozzi. It's coming to Blu-ray shortly from Arrow. The similarities... The only similarity really is that it has these kind of leathery eggs in it. And when people go near the eggs, it makes them their stomachs explode, which doesn't really make any logical sense. But I think it's more of a ripoff of Invasion of the Body Snatchers than it is of Alien. I don't know what you think.
Hmm. Well, it was a typical kind of Italian, both of them. I haven't seen the Aliens on Nerasura or whatever it's called, the Alien 2. You've seen that? It's like a potholing.
Yes, they go spelunking or whatever you call it. And they find a rock that's actually an alien egg. and it starts doing, like, you know, lots of gory things, ripping people's faces off, and they, like, it's very lo-fi, as you can imagine. But it got this most astonishing Blu-ray release a couple of years back, and it looks, the print looks absolutely pristine. It looks like, you know, a 2015 movie. It's just amazing that a film as obscure as this would get that treatment. But apparently 20th Century Fox tried to sue them for advertising or marketing the film as an Alien sequel, but they didn't, you know, get anywhere with their court case, because, you know, there'd been other things. There was a novel in the 1930s called Alien, so they didn't really have copyright on the title. But, I mean, if you're into really, really daft Italian gory movies, then it's a good one to watch. But watching it back to back with Alien was jarring, to say the least, because you're going from one extreme to the other. You know, you're going from this huge, big budget, incredible looking science fiction movie to this one that costs maybe, you know, a couple of lira at the time.
What about there's also the Cinjanor films, you know, yeah. Scared to Death. They have almost the exact same creature design. I think H.R. Giger did, cheaper. I think they did a cheaper design for those films. I could be wrong, but it's like almost identical to the Alien films.
Mm. There's a film out there called Split Second that I haven't seen, but it was directed by, what's his name, who did The Burning?
Yeah, it's got Rutger Hauer.
Tony Malam. Has anyone seen that? Because the cover art makes it look like there's a creature in it that looks like the alien.
Yeah, Split Second's awesome. You should check that out.
And does it have an alien in it that looks like the alien from Alien?
I mean, it does look a lot like the alien from Alien. But I definitely recommend it. It's really fast-paced.
So another one that I haven't seen for years, but I remember catching on video, was Titan Find, aka
Yes, Creature. I haven't seen that in years either, yeah.
And that's got Klaus Kinski in it. And I always remember that it's got a great exploding head. But apart from that, I remember very little.
I remember very little as well. It's also known as Creature, I think, in the States. Mm. And directed by William Malone, who went on to do, what was that film? The remake, House on Haunted Hill.
Yes, yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah. I'd like to catch up that again at some point. But
I suppose another one you could say would be Without Warning, the Graydon Clark movie about the alien. Although that a lot of people say that's more similar to Predator, but again, it has an alien stalking its prey.
What about Return of the Aliens: Deadly Spawn? Now, yes. While I don't know if I necessarily think it's a ripoff of Alien in any way, but. The original title was The Deadly Spawn, and then somebody, I'm thinking they wanted to kind of hope people would mistakenly think it's a sequel, and they retitled it Return of the Aliens Deadly Spawn, which does make it sound like it could be a sequel.
Yeah, and the aliens in that film look nothing like anything in the Alien films.
No, they're more
like phallic critters. Symbols.
Yeah, especially that box art with the aliens kind of going in three different directions look like giant Cox, I guess you'd say.
Yes. But now, if people haven't seen that movie yet, you should watch it because it's really, really good.
It reminds me of a lower budget kind of, it has that kind of Night of the Creeps Monster Squad feel to it. That's why I like it so much.
Mm. And the kid in it is not annoying.
Yeah, I love, he's a great character.
Have you seen Deadly Spawn, Justin?
Yeah, no, I love it. Yeah. It was kind of good fun. It's good fun, and it was made over quite a few years, wasn't it? It was kind of almost like a fan film.
It was like Evil Dead. It was I think there was principal photography, and then loads and loads of pickups over the years until they got complete.
So yeah, that's good fun film. So okay, well, shall we move on to some background? I know we're not going to do a massive amount because this film's obviously being covered to death, but. Eric, did you want to give us a little bit of background?
Okay, well, I've just a few bits and pieces. Dan O'Bannon, of course, was the originator of the story. Now, he was, of course, famous for acting in and co-writing Dark Star with John Carpenter. But he started writing Alien as early as 1972 with a view to it being a very, very low-budget, Roger Corman-y type sci-fi movie, and he was going to direct it himself. Then his friend Ron Cobb helped him out with sort of fleshing out the script a bit more and suggested they shop it around, and it ended up with Brandywine Productions, which was run by Walter Hill and David Giler. And this meant that O'Bannon was no longer in the running to be the director, and eventually Ridley Scott got the gig. And apparently Dan O'Bannon is quite a difficult character. I was reading the magazine Fantastic Films, which was a late 70s, early 80s sci-fi and horror magazine. And he's completely like, you know, he's not holding back in his hatred of the way he was treated on the set of Alien, even though the film was only just coming out at that point. You know, the norm at the moment is for new movies in the press to be press, basically press releases and saying, oh, I loved working with this guy, I loved working with that guy. And it's only in retrospect that they start getting bitchy. But he was like bitchy at the time the film was released. So maybe that's probably why his directing career wasn't as prolific as you might like. I just get the impression he's quite a difficult person. Actually, one of the original titles for the film is Star Beast. Now, I can't imagine it getting the kudos from the critics if it was called Star Beast. I mean, talk about a ridiculous
title. That was the shooting title, wasn't it?
Yeah. I don't know if it was the shooting title, but it was one of the early titles in the script stage, yeah.
According to the Internet Movie Database, I think Star Beast was the actual shooting title. Of course, you know how accurate the IMDb is, so.
Yes. Well, filming commenced on Justin's 39th birthday in July of 1978.
Oh,
Rick. What? Was it not? I was just doing some research. I thought that's what it was. Was it not?
Okay. Well, I've missed you too, Eric. But next time I'll have a better aim.
Ooh. So. That's actually a quite good pun, or quite a good joke. The filming lasted for 16 weeks. John Hurt. This is probably famously known, was not the original choice for the role of... he was the original choice for the role of Kane. He couldn't do it because he was doing some filming in South Africa. So they got this guy called John Finch in to do it, who fell seriously ill on the first day. He was diagnosed with diabetes and he was practically turning yellow and, he couldn't perform at all. Ooh or misses. Then, as it happened, John Hurt's South African film fell through, so he became available again and he took up the role again. The guy who plays the alien for the most part in the movie, it's occasionally a stuntman, but a lot of it is a chap called Bolaji Badejo, who is this Nigerian man who was living and studying in London. He was 6'10", which is quite big. He died in 1992 at the age of 39 from sickle cell anemia, which apparently is some hereditary blood disorder. I was reading something about the original script. It's revealed that the company that they all work for have been involved in genetic engineering, and they have planted the eggs on this planet and are using the crew of the Nostromo as guinea pigs to see if the experiment is a success. Now, in the final film, it's sort of implied that they hear this distress beacon and then they send the crew down, and you know, whatever happens, happens. But it's sort of happened randomly. It hasn't been planned. The film opened on May the 25th, 1979. It made $80 million, which was quite a lot back then, on a budget of about $11 million. And I was reading some reviews at the time, and just one in particular, there was a critic. He was Australian, but he was based in the UK and he used to write for a magazine called Starburst, which was kind of the UK equivalent of Fangoria and Starlog, you know, melded together back in the 80s. And he said that he was quite scathing of the film. He said that as a science fiction film, it's seriously flawed, but as a horror film, it works perfectly. Now, John Brosnan was a science fiction author, so he got kind of nerdy about some of the less sciencey aspects of the science fiction in Alien. He says that there's no way a shockwave can travel through space. That was one of his problems with the film. He also didn't like the fact that the lack of gravity in space was completely ignored by the filmmakers. But he does go on to praise the horror aspects and generally gives it a positive review. But he was nitpicking at that type of stuff. He also thinks that the cast were smothered by the production values, which I kind of disagree. I think there is just enough characterization there for you to care about the people in it. Now, a lot of people have said that it rips off various other films. Some of them mentioned a couple I haven't seen. I haven't seen a film called Night of the Blood Beast from 1958, apparently, where an alien uses a body of a human to incubate its young. The Terror from Beyond Space is often mentioned in the same breath as Alien. Again, I haven't seen it, but it's apparently a creature from Mars stows away in a spaceship and starts killing off the crew, and it hides in the ventilation shafts and is defeated only when the crew don some spacesuits and blow it out of the airlock, which does sound very like Alien, I have to say. But one, there's also another comparison that I think is a bit tenuous. It's with Mario Bava's Planet of the Vampires. And the only real connection is that the rescue team in Planet of the Vampires find the large skeletal remains of some alien race as they're trying to rescue, responding to a distress beacon. But apart from that, there's very little similarity, in my opinion. Justin, I don't know if you'd agree with me. Have you seen Planet of the Vampires?
I have. I mean, I think it was I guess it was that comparison directly, but also there was a kind of I think because it was a horror movie, Planet of the Vampires, as well as a more than in some ways than a sci-fi movie, almost like a ghost movie, I kind of guess. And I think it was, you know, the alien was kind of like a ghost house set in space, wasn't it? I think that was kind of the intention in some ways.
Mm. Well, that's all my background. Do you have any, Justin?
I've got a few bits. I've got in front of me the October 1979 Photoplay magazine. I'm not sure if there was Photoplay came out in the States, but it was a film magazine that came out in the UK. I mean, echoing some of what you said here, it said that there's about five-page special on Alien. And it said that the budget was raised from $1 million to $9 million, which kind of echoes what you said about Dan O'Bannon was originally going to make it as a low-budget movie. So I think I mentioned before about Ridley Scott being attracted to the to this. And by that point, he wasn't particularly well-known as a movie maker. In fact, in here it says he was 39 years old when he made it, and he's relatively unknown to the masses. He made a film called The Duelists, and it said here that strangely he admits to having no interest in space or science fiction, but was struck by the impact of the Alien script, reading it in 40 minutes instead of the usual 2 or 3 days. It was, he recalls, unpretentious, very violent, an amazing piece of entertainment. So again, I think it was interesting that the film, it was less about being a sci-fi film than being a horror movie, which I think is good. Now, the other little bit I'll just read out from here was just, and again, this could be the same kind of PR fluff that you get with many of these movies, and a bit like the press book for The Burning, which has all sorts of mentions of the cast being scared to go out at night and things like that. But when I actually spoke to some of the cast of The Burning, they said that nothing untoward happened, and it was probably made up by the Weinsteins to kind of give the film a little bit extra flavour. But it says here... where is it? It says that H.R. Giger talks about making The Alien, and he actually said, into a little quote from his, "Perhaps for all the time, I even dream about The Alien myself, so much that I'm often frightened to go to sleep," said H.R. Giger. So, and it says, "Not surprisingly, then when the actors finally came upon what they had read about in the script, they too were disturbed. Next day, they saw producer Gordon Carroll and voiced their concern. Their attitude changed completely," explains Carroll. "Suddenly, they saw the project as something else, not just a movie, something with sinister overtones. They became serious. Now they didn't like going down into the corridors of the spaceship, where once they'd moved freely. They complained it was cramped, claustrophobic, unpleasant, especially when the alien was introduced." So it was kind of, again, whether or not that's kind of PR fluff, but it was... it just goes to show that there was, I think, the actors knew that the film was special, and maybe when they signed on to it, they didn't really, they probably did think it was an updating of like the 1950s sci-fi horror movies, but in fact, it was an incredibly modern movie, wasn't it, for 1979 in a lot of ways. But yeah, that's my there is a lot more background, but that's my if you pick up any of the Blu-ray releases of Alien, there's a wealth of information.
Yeah, it's about 5 hours documentaries, yeah, of Alien alone.
Yeah, so how about Joseph, anything extra?
Yeah, the only thing I have, I don't know if you've either of you have mentioned it, because you mentioned a lot, but basically the title card with Alien, how it kind of fizzles into the screen. They originally wanted that to be like Bone and Blood, but they ran tests on that, and they said it was just too gory, so they went with the hieroglyphic kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then originally, I think
their original intent, instead of having this, you know, this big alien that H.R. Giger had, had, you know, designed, their original intent was something more kind of, I guess you'd say, almost like the Predator in a way, kind of chameleonic, except for, you know, it would imitate whatever it was near, like, you know, if it was near a human, it would be a human, or if it was near, like, an ostrich, it would be an ostrich, or a tree, it'd be a tree, and then I think they scrapped that idea. That's pretty much all I have on it.
That would have been quite something to see, see an ostrich.
An alien ostrich.
Yes. Well, I don't think it's going to be an ostrich, but, you know, I was reading in some of the quotes from some of the writers, and they were talking about how, you know, their original intent was just, you know, he was just mentioning, you know, he just said that, you know, kind of off the cuff. But that would be funny, a killer ostrich in space.
Well, there you go. That's probably an idea for the next sequel. So, yeah, thank you, Joseph. What about you, Nathan? Is there anything you wanted to add?
No.
Okay. just going back to something that Joseph said there is the opening credit sequence, and I was saying how much I love it, and I think the opening credit sequence is kind of a lost art these days. A lot of films don't have them, which I think is a shame. When you see something like Alien or like the Bond movies, or another favorite opening credit sequences for the original Halloween 2, you know, I think they can really, really help build an atmosphere, and it can be really intriguing. They don't have to just be, you know, credits on a black background.
I was just going to say they're practical too. If you're running short on reaching a running time, you could just do a 2.5 minute credit sequence with a good music.
Yep. But I love the poster art as well for Alien. With the it's very cryptic. I mean, if you didn't know anything about the film, you would wonder what is that. It's kind of an egg with a flash of green light in front of it. You know, again, the horror movie poster, it's a dying art to a degree, courtesy of films like Scream and that. But I loved that. I mean, I remember seeing that long before I saw Alien. I remember seeing the poster and just being really, really intrigued and kind of spooked by it.
Hmm. I think it was, I think I've mentioned this before on the podcast, I'm sure I have, but back in the day, because I remember seeing the poster at the cinema when I was, you know, on the way to school. And
39, all right. And which work, you mean, no?
Yeah, I was working at school at that point. No, I wasn't even in secondary school at that point, Eric. But I remember seeing the poster, but also somebody telling me, and I can't remember if this was, you know, I don't know if this is true or not, but someone said that a woman saw Alien, she was so frightened she pissed herself. So,
yeah. Ew.
Yeah, well, but that was the story that was going around, and that somebody, you know, so it had that reputation as being one of the scariest movies ever made, and certainly by, I mean, you know, 70s have got a rich heritage of horror movies, haven't they? But there's not, I'm trying to think if there's many scary movies in the 70s. I mean, there are. I mean, like the classically scary, like The Exorcist, and to some degree The Omen, and films like that. But and obviously Halloween, you know. I wonder whether or not Alien would have turned out like it did without Halloween beforehand. Because the one question we haven't really tackled is, before we move on to feedback, is I mean, we have in passing, but would we consider Alien to be a slasher movie in any way, shape, or form? Or what do we think?
I think we've tackled that. I definitely say it is without an actual human with a knife. It definitely has all those tropes. Like I said, the cat scare, one by one. It's basically Agatha Christie done sci-fi.
I mean, we mentioned it in passing, but we haven't. I'm just being sort of tackling it head on once and for all. But I mean,
I would not consider it a slasher movie myself. No, I can see. I can see how you could shoehorn it into this subgenre, but I've never, like, if I was filing my DVDs by genre, which I don't because I'm not that big of a nerd, Alien wouldn't be in with the slasher movies.
Mm. I would tend to agree with Eric, although it shares a lot with the slasher movie. I don't think
it does.
That,
yeah.
It's
yeah,
not.
A distant relative.
Yeah. No,
I'm glad that Michael Alexander has chosen it because, as I said, it's possibly one of my, if not my favorite film of all time, because I just adore the film. So
if we can cover Rabbit Grannies, we can cover Alien.
We can cover
Predator, then, or the Sadist, then we can cover Alien.
Ooh, controversial. But Nathan, what are your thoughts? Would you say this fits into the slasher movie mold, or would you say it's a distant cousin?
if I'm being honest, any movie where a group of people are getting picked off one by one is a slasher movie to me. Mm-hmm. I think Willy Wonka is a slasher movie.
Well, there you go. That's one we'll have to cover. That's what we'll be covering next time.
I love that one.
Me too.
So,
Eric.
Yeah?
Do you have a joke of the week?
I do. Play the jingle, maestro.
It's my joke of the week. It's so, so
okay, so what do you call a Glaswegian who is an expert at delivering a statement, a question, or a phrase that has a double or veiled meaning? A Ridley Scott.
That was good, Eric. I like that
one. Very much.
I didn't understand the question.
Riddly.
Yeah, Eric, you've had 2 months to come up with that.
Yeah, and what your point is?
I think I've just made my point. But thank you, Eric.
Sorry, Justin. Were you talking to me, or were you watching Mad Max Fury Road with sunglasses on?
Well, that wasn't my fault, Eric, was it?
If you say so.
Well, in case people,
dear listeners,
know,
Justin went to see a 3D screening of Mad Max Fury Road and brought sunglasses with him by mistake.
Instead of
3D glasses.
Stuart brought sunglasses by mistake and gave me the sunglasses, and I put them on. And then he had to go down and admit to the people at the front desk, and they felt so sorry for him. They gave him a free pair of 3D glasses. But he has done that twice before. So,
were you annoyed?
Well, I was a bit like, oh, God, not again. But
is Stuart older than you, Justin?
He is, yes.
Oh,
that explains it.
Suddenly it becomes clear.
It does, yeah. When he left the room, you can smell mothballs and Lily of the Valley and a little bit of piss. So, okay, well, sorry, go on.
No, he was just clearing my throat, sorry.
Okay. Right. Well, shall we move on to some feedback? Let's play the how to get in touch with the show, because I think we've got a few bits of feedback to get through.
Be sure to search for and like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at @THC_podcast. Our voicemail is 858-233-9281. And you can email us directly at the.hysteria.continues@gmail.com.
So, yes, please do get in contact with the show. We're having a few technical issues. We've lost Joseph.
Okay, although I think you can try him again now. He sent me a text message saying he's back. His internet cut out.
Okay, well, let's. So this is happening in real time. Let's see if we can. So this is the magic behind under the boot, as it were, under the bonnet. So will we get Joseph back? We thought it might be. Here we are. Joseph, you're back.
Yeah, my internet cut out like briefly when I was in the bathroom.
Oh, right. Okay. Right. So.
That must have been quite a titanic poo you did to make the internet crash.
Well, actually, it might have been my cat because I was yelling at the cat because she puked all over the kitchen.
Oh.
It's a glamour. It's a relentless glamour that keeps me coming back.
It's like the Kardashians. They always have these problems too.
Yeah. Yes. Well, we're live. You're live on air, Joseph. Don't swear. As they always say. But
Davina.
Indeed. So we get on to feedback. So we haven't started any yet. I was going to say, we thought it might have been a bit like, what's it called? Unfriended? Or I watched The Den the other week on Netflix as well, which I quite enjoyed. That was quite silly, though.
I haven't seen it.
No. You've not seen it. You mentioned it, didn't you, Joseph and Nathan, a while back?
Nathan's seen it, I think. I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, right.
Okay, what did you guys say? Seen what?
The Den.
I saw The Den.
Yeah, it was quite good, wasn't it? It was quite silly. It gets quite silly towards the end.
Yes, it gets very silly at the end. Right? It's entertaining.
Yeah, so cool. Okay, well, let's crack on with some feedback. So who would like to go first?
I will.
I'll go.
You want to fight for it? You go ahead, Eric.
Okay. Well, this is from our good friend and former co-host at one stage, Kieran Edwards. Kieran, the voice Edwards, as I like to call him. Hello, gents. Just wanted to say congratulations on 100 excellent episodes of The Hysteria Continues, and I look forward to the next 100. You've given us about 13,599 minutes of entertainment. I think Brad Yasuda calculated this first. And the OCD side of me wants to say, you couldn't have played the cat flushing a toilet song a couple of more times to give us an even 13,600 minutes. But I won't say that. Instead, I'll say I'm looking forward to the next 13,599 minutes. I also want to say that I'm sorry to hear about the small speed bump regarding Gory graduation, but I think more prep time and more fundraising time will make it an even better production. Thanks again for this podcast, and I look forward to talking with you guys about some movie in the not-too-distant future. And that's from Kieran Edwards.
Excellent.
What are,
thank you,
what are these speed bumps, Joseph, in Gory graduation?
Oh, basically just, you know, securing a school location, and we're still kind of going through those motions, and we're trying to raise a little bit extra money because, you know, we don't want to, you know, do this on the cheap like we did with The Night Before Easter, and we actually want to put a lot of, you know, time, effort, and money into this, so we're going to wait until next year to start filming. Hopefully we'll have a location by then, but that's pretty much it.
We should have told people we were making potato salad.
Yeah.
Instead of a movie.
but on, back on to, you know, Kieran, he will be joining us. I don't know when, but he will be joining us again sometime in the not too distant future, because he did donate to Gory graduation.
With his amazing voice.
Yes. Who did that?
Me.
Eric, you sound really
quite
butch.
quite a good Kieran.
Thank you.
He sounds like Kieran reminds me of Tobin Bell. It's like, I am Tobin Bell from Saw. Kieran Edwards from Saw.
Do you reckon before we get to episode 200, we might actually do a trailer that we can play on other podcasts?
Yeah, I keep saying I'm going to, you know, make one. I'm actually on a staycation this week. I've got 7 days off from work, so actually maybe I'll throw something together finally.
Okay, well, it'd be good to, yeah, I mean, ideally, you know, that'd be, could be great if we come up with something, because I think it'd be good to swap around with a few little trailers for other podcasts, so it's...
And then I'll get Kieran Edwards to narrate the trailer for us.
Exactly. Yes, that would be great. All right.
Eric, actually, I talk like this for most of the week, Eric, because I had a cold, you know.
Do you remember
I'm getting, I'm getting over it now.
Sexy.
Nathan, you had a really deep voice a little while ago, didn't you? You had a cold.
I did, and I lost that wonderful voice. Now I'm stuck back with this squeaky thing.
Actually, he went through puberty.
Right. Okay. Well, anyway, so yes, it'll be a miracle if we can. Let's get a trailer out. But before we do that, let's move on to the next one. Eric, do you want to go?
No, that was me.
No, Joseph. Yeah, sorry, Joseph. Do you want to go next?
Sure. This is from our good friend, Tosca
Top Socks.
Hey, Tosca.
He says, "Hello, Joseph, Justin, Eric, and Nathan. Just want to extend my congratulations to you on the milestone that is your 100th podcast. I have to say that you guys just get better with each one, and I always look forward to my regular fill, if you know what I mean. Terror Train was a great way to celebrate your 100th, and it just happens to be one of my favorites, obviously due to St. Jamie Lee. I have to apologize for neglecting you guys over recent months, but I have been kept busy at work and with renovating my house. Needless to say, I download your episodes religiously and listen to them whenever I can. It has been a very sad couple of weeks for all horror hounds, given the passing of both the incomparable Christopher Lee and the wonderful Betsy Palmer, but both have given me fantastic memories. Indeed, it was Miss Palmer that originally both terrified me as a youngster and got me interested in all things slasher. Rest in peace, guys. On to happier things, though, and wishing you all the best for the next 100. Keep it up, apart from Eric, of course, for whom it seems it never goes down, you scoundrel. Best wishes, your good old pal, Tosca Top Socks. P.S. It was great to hear my name on your 100th episode. Made my day."
Oh, Santa.
Santa's back. Shaking his little bell. Always good to hear from you, Tosca. And, but listening to The Hysteria Continues is perfect for when you're renovating the house. And actually, judging by the length of this one, you can probably renovate two houses during the Alien episode. So, but yes, always good to hear from you. So
I have a Betsy Palmer story I don't think I've ever told.
Oh, yeah.
Shortly after watching Friday the 13th for the first time, I had a nightmare that I was being chased around my hometown of Kilkenny by Betsy Palmer, by Mrs. Voorhees. And it climaxed, if you pardon the horrible word, in a pound shop where she was chasing me around with an axe. Now, a pound shop is for Joseph and Nathan, is where everything in there costs a pound. So it's kind of a tat shop, but I was being chased around one by Betsy Palmer. It was quite a terrifying nightmare.
I can imagine with those. But did they have pound shops back in the day?
Yeah. Hmm. The 80s, yeah.
Okay. Yes. Well, we didn't. It's kind of a relatively new thing here. Obviously, we're not quite as cheap as Ireland, but yeah. There you go. But no, it's a shame. I never actually got to meet Betsy Palmer. She seemed like a lovely lady.
And did you guys meet her at any of the conventions?
No, unfortunately, no. We didn't get the chance. Mm.
She's got this, not ironically, but a few weeks before her death, there was a little documentary promoted by her page about her, or an interview with her about her life and Friday the 13th, which you can pay to see. I don't know where the link is, but if you went to Betsy Palmer's page, I'm sure you could see it. So it'd be a nice way of celebrating her life and her contribution to slasher movies, which were, she obviously hated to start off with, but then sort of like many people who've made slasher movies, once they realise the love for them, and also perhaps cynically the money for conventions will bring, and not saying Betsy Palmer, but I'm sure that is a draw for lots of people, they renegotiate their relationship with the slasher movie.
And I'm celebrating the life of Christopher Lee because I pre-ordered a copy of the new upcoming Blu-ray of Howling 2.
Oh, yes. And again, it gets Sybil Danning's boobies in high definition.
Yeah, multiple times.
Multiple times at the end. So,
she never went topless in a movie.
She does.
Boy, have you not seen Howling 2?
Sorry, he's being sarcastic, sorry.
Oh, right, sorry.
Yeah, you had us, sorry.
Oh.
Because she's been topless in almost every movie since.
I feel such a fool.
She wasn't topless in Meteor. Do you remember Meteor?
Yeah, it's years since I saw it. I don't remember her being in it. Sean Connery's in it.
She was. I'm pretty sure it was Meteor. She was in the ski lodge one where the avalanche comes down. Oh. But her blouse doesn't ping off in that.
She also appears in that documentary on Canon Films as well.
She's
with a blouse on.
She's in the Red Queen Kill Seven Times, Giallo.
Is she? So,
yeah, she's been around, and she was in a few Gialli. I think Eye of the Hurricane, I think, was another one she was in, if that's the name of it. But yeah, she was around in the early 70s. So she's right up there. Yeah. So it's surprising.
Amazing bazongas.
Yes. Well, it's a miracle that bazongas looked so pert in Howling 2, considering she was around in the early 70s. But I digress. So let's move on to another bit of feedback. This sounds like a first-time listener, I think, maybe not. But this is Dear Hysteria Continues. Firstly, congratulations on getting to 100 episodes. The many shows I've heard are always entertaining and informative. I haven't listened to every episode yet, wanting to watch some of the films before any spoilers. As I haven't listened to all of them yet, you may have covered this as a top three. Top three slasher movie soundtrack scores, which I think we've done. Top three songs that appear in slasher movie, either made especially for the film, e.g. Prom Night, or previously existing, e.g. Mr. Sandman from Halloween 2. I think, again, we've done that.
Yeah, I think we have, yeah.
I think the only thing we've got left to do is top three slasher movie grips, isn't it? Or T-Boys. Yeah. As an aside, for the longest time, only thing I could recall about John Russo's Midnight was the oft-repeated theme tune, which, of course, we've talked about, much-loved that song you can never get out of your head. It's possible I just want to hear The Cat. I don't quite get that. But anyway, I wondered whether on Hysteria Live's site or elsewhere you could have a page that lists the commentaries that you've been doing.
He means the cat flushed in the toilet.
Oh, right. Okay, yes, fair enough. Not the Jingle Bells. What's your cat called, by the way, Joseph?
Well, I have two, Rumham and Toro, but although we call Toro Diorito because Toro has like orange shit.
Ew.
It looks like a Dorito chip, so we called her Diorito.
It's TMI.
Actually, we had Argento was in earlier, but he's gone off. I was hoping I would get him purring, but he had when I came down from work the other day, I went down to stroke him, and he'd rolled in some poo. So
the glamour.
I know. And I had to run around the house with wet wipes, and he was doing that fast walk cats do when they're not running, but they're just trying to out, you know. So it was like some kind of bizarre Benny Hill sketch, like with fecal matter. But anyway, back to this email. It says, other people have suggested that we should actually put what commentaries we've appeared on. So, that is a project we will get round to, I'm sure. And lastly, he says, thanks again. I look forward to the next 100 episodes. And that's from Bevan Shortridge from Auckland, New Zealand. So I'm not sure if that's our first Kiwi listener. I do apologize hopefully we might have some more, but always good to hear from people. So thank you, Bevan.
Okay, I have another one here.
Okay.
This is from Brennan Klein. It's Brennan Klein here again of Popcorn Culture, which you can find at jiffypopculture.blogspot.com. Thank you so much for your shout out on your Terror Train episode, which, by the way, was impeccable as always. Terror Train is one of my all-time favorites, and you definitely did it justice. For your troubles, I decided to make you and you're going to like this, Justin. I decided to make you a Hysteria Continues drinking game. Your loyal fans can play it while they're listening, as long as they're not driving. And you can play it too if you feel like getting a little sauced while you podcast. Ahem, Justin.
I'm completely teetotal. I've not had a single drink since last today. Night.
Yeah, yes, since last night. Yeah. Okay, so here are the rules. You take a sip whenever you hear the cat flushing a toilet, when a matron comes around, whenever Justin says the phrase, a little bit later. I don't know, is that one of your catchphrases, Justin?
I don't know, is it?
Whenever Justin ends a sentence with, isn't it?
Yeah, because you say, we'll come on to that a little bit later.
Okay. All right.
Right.
Take a sip whenever Nathan mentions his love for a film that everyone else hates. Well, you'd be plastered then. or take a sip whenever Joseph waxes poetic about chase scenes. Okay, and you take a shot for the following. Take a shot when Eric sings. You'll need it. I've got a voice of an angel, I'll have you know. Take a shot if Toya is mentioned first, and then take a sip for the inevitable Susie retaliation. Take a shot when Inga appears. That must be you, Justin, is it? Take a shot if Bob Hoskins is mentioned. Take a shot if Nathan has no background information to contribute. A lot of these have actually appeared in this episode so far.
Somebody's going to be drunk with that one.
I know. Yeah. Take a shot if somebody brings up Joseph's heterosexuality. And take a shot whenever Skype messes up, which thankfully they wouldn't have been drunk today. But if they were drinking, if they were playing this game on our Bloody Moon episode, God help them.
Oh my goodness, yes.
Or the Crinoline Head episode where it just kept skipping, they would have been dead.
Oh, yeah.
From alcohol poisoning.
Classic. Okay, chug. Chug if Susie is mentioned first, and then take a sip for the inevitable Toya retaliation. Chug if Dirty Dancing is mentioned, which it hasn't been yet today. Dirty Dancing. Chug if a pet cat or dog causes chaos in the background. It's like he's psychic.
Yes.
Chug anytime you want to. I don't control you. So there are the rules of the game. And he says, have fun, Brennan. Well, thank you, Brennan.
Thank you, Brennan. Yes. Yeah, I think we would be very drunk, wouldn't we?
We'd be very, very drunk because, let's see. Oh, we certainly had the cats in the background. Toya has been mentioned. Bob Hoskins has been mentioned. There's no Skype mess ups though, thankfully, and Nathan's had no background information to contribute, so there'd be some drinks would have been taken.
Eric did have a few Inga moments.
Did I?
They were minor, but they were there.
Yes.
Well, I don't want anybody to die of alcohol poisoning during our next episode with my quiz.
Yeah, well actually, I'm going to win that, especially now that I can steal points from Justin.
Well, yes, because I've got that Inga Megamix. Do you reckon I should hold that on for the quiz show? Because I'm sure Inga will be making an appearance.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Does that make sense?
Because it's quite. Because this is a big long one.
It certainly
already.
But no, that was. I'd like that drinking game. Although we say, obviously, responsible podcasters, please, drink sensibly. Or not.
Do it because Justin can't.
Yeah.
Well, we did talk about doing a drunk cast, didn't we, at some point? But unfortunately,
I still want to do that. actually.
But the problem is for me and Eric. I mean, obviously, Eric's Irish, so he can drink any time. But
what a stereotype! Well, why don't you go do some Morris dancing then?
Well, actually, I was down the pub the other night, and the Morris dancers turned up. But I digress again.
They exist.
Yeah. Yeah, there was Morris dancers. We had to clear the tables, and they did bloody Morris dancing. It was very annoying, but. But yeah, that's the perils of drinking in English pubs. But for Nathan and Joseph, you know, drinking at 7 o'clock in the morning might be, I don't know, especially at work, you probably could do that, could you, if you had to go to work? So we'll have to come up with a time when you know, we can record us later in the evening, and Nathan and Joseph can be a bit like in Serial Mom, where they have a beer at lunch, which is obviously not drinking.
Yeah, obviously.
As we know. So, okay, Joseph, do you have another one?
Yes, I do. It's just one line. It's from Ken McLeod, who says, "Eric, I thought your 100th episode joke was great."
Oh, thank you. I can't remember what it was, but thank you.
Yeah, I don't remember either.
It was something to do with Terror Train, so I can't think. No.
Okay, well, I've got a really, really long one. So you're going to need to sit back and, yeah, and get ready. Get prepared, Eric. Get in the position. So, here we go. It's, "Hey guys, congrats on the 100 episodes and thank you for all the hours of entertainment you provided. I'll be looking forward to hundreds more. You guys are like the Beatles of horror podcasts." We've done that before, haven't we, Eric? You were Ringo, weren't you? Yeah, I seem to remember.
No,
I'll let
John.
You decide who is who.
I'm John.
Just thought, I just...
Except I'm alive.
Except you're alive, yes. For the moment. Just thought I'd send in some comments on the Stanley Film Festival. We saw 15 horror movies this year and had a great time. Horror fans are the friendliest, most welcoming community people I've ever encountered. Unfortunately, the films this year don't quite make it to levels of last year's films, like The Babadook or Housebound. But there were some gems in there. Most were slow burns, no real slashers. Here's a list. Sorry, it's so long-winded. Shrew's Nest, two sisters, one crazy agoraphobic. The other is submissive and outgoing. Turns into a kind of misery style story. Great performances, some gore, interesting story. Good Night, Mommy. Again, two siblings, but this time it's two young boys. Mom just had plastic surgery and her face is bandaged. Is it Mommy or is it an imposter? Very slow burn. Anyone with horror experience knows where it's going. Good performances by the kids. Not bad, but not my favourite. The Invitation. Guy goes to a dinner party held by his ex-wife, who's been away in Mexico at a cult retreat, and shit goes down eventually. 1 hour and 20 minutes into this movie, that is. I fucking hated this movie, but talking to other attendees, I seem to be the only one who did. Many others had it as their favourite of the festival. I'd be interested in hearing what you guys think." So obviously, hopefully we'll get onto these. I haven't heard any of these yet at all. Next one's The Hallow, an Irish movie about a drunk man in Dublin. It's an Irish movie about a couple with a newborn that move into a house in the country that has some creatures in the woods. One of the better ones of the festival. Well done, effects, and some decent scares. Have you heard of that, Eric? The Hallow?
I haven't, actually, no.
Okay. Another one to look forward to. And next one, Stung. Two caterers deal with giant wasps at a garden party. Seemed a little too sci-fi channel-y for me. Funniest thing is as though they just followed Lance Henriksen around with a camera for his scenes. The Nightmare, this is one I think, Joseph, you were talking about, wasn't it? It's a documentary about nightmares and sleep paralysis from the makers of Room 237. 45 minutes of film.
And I hated it. It's a subject very dear to me because I suffer from sleep paralysis, but it was kind of insulting.
Okay, well, he goes on to say 45 minutes of film spread out to 1 hour and 30 minutes, my other least favourite movie. So he agrees with you. The Boy, a boy living with his dad at a roadside motel. They become obsessed with death. David Morse plays the dad and Rainn Wilson plays a guest. Could be seen as almost a prequel to Psycho. It was okay. I wouldn't rush to see it again. Most attendees hated it. Then there's Sun Choke. A young woman with issues receiving some kind of psychiatric treatment from a woman played by Barbara Crampton. The woman becomes obsessed with a beautiful woman and things get out of control. The movie didn't explain much, but I kind of liked it. The performances were very good. So it's good to see Barbara Crampton, you know, is working quite a lot, isn't she, in horror movies at the moment, which is always good to see. Over Your Dead Body, Takeshi Miike, Nowhere as Good as Audition, weird. We Are Still Here, which you mentioned before. Haunted House movie with Barbara Crampton. The only movie of the festival I would call scary. Very well done, great gore and funny in parts. My favourite of the festival. See this when you can. So a slightly differing opinion to Joseph there. Deathgasm. My other favourite of the festival, two metalheads play some old sheet music they find, summon demons and have to fix things. Super gory, very funny, and the same producers, Housebound, reminded me a lot of Evil Dead 2. One caveat, if you absolutely hate heavy metal, don't see this. There's a lot of metal in the soundtrack, but it also makes fun of metalheads a lot. Next one is Some Kind of Hate. Teens at a new agey juvenile detention camp release the spirit of a dead bullied girl. She proceeds to get revenge on pretty much everyone. Cliched bullies, but I still enjoyed it. Probably the most slasher of the fest. There's a few more here. The Body. Three young women have to deal with a body in the house in which they're trespassing. More of a thriller than horror, but still well performed and directed. Another Irish film here is Let Us Pray, and Pray yes, spelled
I've heard of that one. That's out cinemas over here at the moment.
Oh, is it?
Sorry, okay. Sorry, Justin, I thought you'd pause there. The line broke, sorry.
That's okay. Don't worry, Eric. You don't have to apologise yet again. did you say it's out of the cinema, or is it getting
It's out in cinemas over here at the moment, but I haven't seen it yet. Yeah.
Okay, well, he says, Irish revenge karma flick, a man with unusual powers serves justice to wrongdoers, gets kind of out of control in the end in a good way. I enjoyed it. Plus, Liam Cunningham, Davos from Game of Thrones, is the main guy. He's bearded, older, and kind of gruff. Eric will love him.
He's in one of the Argento. Is it The Card Player he's in, I think, as well?
Right, okay, cool. Just closing a bit here says, the only other one we saw was the original Bride of Frankenstein, and I'm sure don't need to say anything about that. We miss Cooties and The Final Girls, but I know everyone loved them both, and The Final Girls won the audience award. Elijah Wood was there again this year, Nathan, as well as Barbara Crampton, Stuart Gordon and Mick Garris. Sorry for being so long. I hope you could take it all in. We certainly could, Corey from Colorado. So always a pleasure. Thank you for your on the scene report. So that was lots of films there to look out for, and I'd only heard of a couple of them. It's you know, good times for horror. You know, low budget or mid budget horror movies. So it's good to see so many being made. So all good stuff.
I met Elijah Wood. He was really nice.
I know. Yes. And as we spoke before, we all saw Elijah's Wood in the Maniac remake.
Who are misses?
Yes. Do we have anything else? Do we have any more feedback? Or are we holding something back maybe for next time?
No, I think that was everything we had.
Okay. Well, this is going to be a bit of an epic. I think we're well over the 2-hour mark. So obviously we had a lot to get out of our system, didn't we?
We did.
So after being apart for such a long time, so it's good to be back. It's good to be chatting horror and slashers and aliens and Toya, less so.
Hey.
But we will be playing out with I think it's
Toya.
Yes, we'll be playing out with
the B-side of I Want to Be Free is Alien, and it's brilliant, just like everything Toya does.
Well, you've got that to, and let's just hope it doesn't get interrupted by a Susie song at some point. I can't see how that can
Susie
happen.
Doesn't have any Alien
but,
songs.
But if we're in, you know, when you're in space, things tend to go wrong and malfunction, so we'll have
to see. Now I wish I would have thought this through, because I could have threw in a Devin Townsend song, because one of his bands had an album called Alien. And I didn't think about it.
Well, there you go. So, well, who knows? Maybe that. Who knows what's going to happen? I was going to put I fell in love with Starship Trooper by Sarah Brightman.
But that's got nothing to do with aliens.
Well, it's kind of it's sci-fi, isn't it? That's one of my favourite trashy kind of 70s sci-fi pop songs. But anyway,
I think before we go, I should probably tell everybody what our next film is going to be.
Exactly, yes. In a couple of weeks' time, hopefully we're going to be back on some kind of level pegging. Joseph, you're going to be... It's your choice next from the listener picks. And what are we doing next time?
Yes, it is another listener pick from Chris Genro, who donated to Gory Graduation. We will be covering Valentine from, 2000? 2001?
Yep. Yes, 2001, wasn't it? Yeah, I think, yeah.
So, looking forward to that one.
Excellent. Okay, well, I am looking forward to it. I don't even think I own a copy of Valentine. I do remember seeing it at cinema, and maybe once...
I know where you can get a copy.
I bet you do. But I'm sure I can pick up a copy for not very much money, so and probably pennies. But yes, we'll be back with Valentine next time. So thanks for rejoining us for episode 101 of The Hysteria Continues. And we'll be playing out with some old harpy. I mean, Toya. And we'll see you next time. So say goodbye to the good people.
Bye.
Goodbye, good people.
This is Eric Ripley, last survivor of The Hysteria Continues, signing off.
This is Kieran Edwards. I'll see you soon.
See you soon. Bye.
Enjoy Toya.
With the new dog, I've been having to get up at 5:30 every morning.
Right. Well, so this is a lie-in for you.
Yeah.
So I'm just trying to work out what Argento's doing.
It's not a lion, it's a dog.
Is that your joke of the week?
No, my joke of the week's even better.
So, did you have a lovely holiday or holidays, Eric?
It was fucking cloudy.
Cloudy?
Yes.
Oh.
So not impressed. We've lost Joseph. We've lost Joseph.
Maybe his cat's chewed through the power cord.
I know what that's like.
Somebody eating crisps.
No, that was me opening a shoebox.
What? Like Dawn Davenport eating meatballs right out of their
class. These aren't cha-cha heels.
Space things out, isn't it?
Yeah. Ooh.
Talking space.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. It's the wee. Sorry.
Okay.
It's the poo. It's sure it's not the poo.
It's the poo.
Eric.
I love that joke. It's brilliant. Fantastic. Hi, I'm 41.
You're 41.
Yeah.
I wanna see Pluto, I wanna have fun.